أعوذ بالله من الشيطان الرجيم بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم وصلى الله على محمد وعلى آله الطاهرين اللهم صل على محمد وآل محمد. Dear brothers and sisters, assalamu alaikum to yet another session in our course from Ali to Al-Mahdi, a course on establishing imama and getting to know the imam of our time, Imam Mahdi, and knowing our responsibilities in the time of ghaiba. Now in this session, the seventh session, we'll be discussing, inshallah, we'll be continuing our discussion in our journey that we started a few days back, where we discussed imama in light of the Quran and in light of the intellect, and we established a few things in there. And we said that the more detailed explanations of these concepts that the intellect and the Quran pointed us to, we will see them in the ahadith. So one of the very important things that the Quran told us is that the Quran tells us to refer to a source outside of itself for guidance, and that the guidance of that source is as binding as the guidance of the Quran, and that with the Quran itself we cannot reach felicity. There are many important instructions that the Quran has only alluded to and asked us to go to a source outside of itself for detail, and that source is obviously the Holy Prophet of Islam sallallahu alaihi wa alihi. So what we want to do now is to see what has the Holy Prophet said about this whole concept of imama. And to go through this discussion, we have Sheikh Miqdad with us today. Assalamu alaikum, Sheikhna.
Alaikum salam.
Thank you very much for being with us. Inshallah, it should be a fruitful discussion looking at what the Holy Prophet has to say on this topic of imama. So let's get cracking.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Alhamdulillahi rabbil alameen. Wa sallallahu ala muhammadin wa alihi at-tahirin. Allahumma salli ala muhammad wa ali muhammad. I send my salams to all the viewers out there, and inshallah, yes, hope for a very interesting and very beneficial discussion, inshallah. We're going to talk about the hadith from the Prophet, right? And as you mentioned very clearly, that this is a source for us in our understanding of imama. Having looked at the Aql and the Quran, now we turn to the Holy Prophet, and whatever the Prophet says for us, it's binding. We have to listen. It's an authority, and that we have to accept what he says.
Yeah.
And we find that there are many traditions from the Holy Prophet talking about imama, and we want to explore five of those traditions.
Okay.
Right. So if you bring my screen, I just want to talk about these five traditions very quickly, and then go on into each of them in more detail. So the first hadith that we'll talk about is the hadith of Thaqalain, Inni tarikun fikum wa Thaqalain. The second hadith is the hadith known as the hadith of Manzila. So each of them have a name.
Yeah. Easy, so it's for easy us to refer to them and exactly. To remember them as well.
So the hadith of Manzila is where the Prophet brings about the status of Harun to Musa, similar to him and Imam Ali, Amir al-Mu'mineen. And then we move on to Ghadir, talk about Man Kuntu Mawla. And then the last two hadith from the Prophet is the hadith of Ithna Ashar, where he talks about the 12 Khalifa. And lastly is the hadith of Man Mata, whoever doesn't know the Imam of his time dies a death death of Jahiliyyah.
Okay.
Before we move on into each of these single hadith that we want to talk about, let's talk about the discussion on methodology. So if you show my screen, we want to talk about two main questions, right? Because here we are, sitting over here right now, right? And we wanted to talk about what the Prophet said to us regarding imama.
Yeah.
So the two main questions that come to us regarding this, okay, is this. The first one is, did the Prophet really say this? Right now, this is unlike the Holy Quran. You don't ask this question in the Quran.
Because the authenticity of the Quran is pretty much clear. We don't doubt that. But exactly. When it comes to the Sunnah of the Prophet, the Hadith, there is always this question: did the Holy Prophet say this? We have the whole discussion of authenticity, in which we touched on and discussed some of the foundations regarding that. Yeah.
Exactly. So before discussing anything about these five Hadith, what we're going to do is talk about establishing the fact that really the Prophet said this.
Yeah.
Right. And secondly is, what did the Prophet mean when he said this?
Yeah.
Right? Because there's often discussions, especially in these five hadith, right? These five hadith are hadith that we are certain that the Prophet said this.
Yeah.
Right? Inshallah, that's what I'm going to try and prove. And then discussion will come about, what did he really mean? And this is why we have to try and establish and bring as much certainty into what we're trying to explain and say, okay, the Prophet really meant this.
Yeah. I think whoever is familiar to us, even a certain extent regarding these discussions of imama, when you hear these names of... at least the hadith of Ghadir, I think everybody knows that this has definitely happened. It's definitely from the Prophet. We know that the Sunnis believe in this and the Shias believe in this. We know that this is linked to the two verses of the Quran that we discussed earlier with Sheikh Ali. So in terms of authenticity, we're just going to do it as an exercise, I guess. But in terms of authenticity, we're pretty clear on it. the most important and crucial part of the discussion is understanding what the Prophet was actually trying to say in those.
You're right, but you know something, I'll tell you something. So I spent hours doing this. I hadn't done this for myself before. So before when we grow up, we know this hadith, we read this hadith, and we know this is part of our aqidah, right? But when you reopen the books, and I did this, I didn't even suffice by just taking a secondary book or something for my teachers, for example, and whatever they've quoted. I actually went back and looked at the book and opened the books, right? And when you open the books and you actually find the written in black and white, right?
You with see
the
ink, yourself being there.
Exactly.
In the
you feel
books.
It kind of brings a certainty to you. Yeah, this is what's important. So coming to the certainty, let me talk about the methodology I want to use regarding this first question of did the Prophet really say this? Let me draw it out like this to you. Imagine that you have this person and then this person. So please do show my screen. So this person, that person, that person, this person, and a huge number of people, okay, who come across to you and say to you that the Holy Prophet has said this.
Okay.
Right? They're saying the same thing.
So these are the Prophet who heard directly from the Prophet.
Exactly. They heard from the Prophet and they're saying to you, Qala Rasulullah. Okay. They say, Qala Rasulullah, Qala Rasulullah. Right? So a multitude of people, not just one person, a multitude of people. These individuals are then quoted by giants. Let's call them this. Okay.
The people these, later on that come later and quote these guys.
Exactly. So these are scholars, right? These are experts in the field, right? They are very close to the time of the Prophet, right? Maybe 2 centuries, right? 2.5 centuries. They are very familiar with the science of hadith. They know these people.
They're the authorities in the science, basically.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And they have what we want to call a filter, right? And the thing is that each of them have their own filter, their own methodology to decipher whether this was said by the Prophet or not, right?
Yeah.
Now, when you find that all of these giants, these big guys, right? Now, whether they can be Sunnis or Shias, it doesn't make too much difference for me over here. They're scholars who have ikhtilaf in the methodology of how they decipher what is sahih, what I count as sahih, who I take from, right? And each of them claims that this hadith is sahih, according to me, right? The next person might not agree, but he quotes the same hadith from a different chain.
And despite having different methodologies, even methodologies that don't agree with each other,
exactly.
And yet they all come and say this is all of them say that regarding this particular hadith, it's sahih.
Exactly. So they mention all these hadith in their books, right? So Holy Prophet, quoted by a large number of narrators, right? Who then are quoted by the scholars of hadith, okay, who are familiar with all the strategies and all the different ways and methodologies, who then quote exactly the same hadith in their books, right? When you have this, okay, this brings certainty to you. In what way? In this way that you think that it's very improbable, right? Close to zero probability, okay, that this many people would have come together and would have invented, because it's one hadith, right? They would have invented together. So imagine a pocket of group of people, let's say 20 people, get together, say, you know what, we're going to lie about this, right? And then after that, a number of people come. And then these giants as well, they also say, oh, you know, this is fine. There's no lie about this. Very improbable.
And they're all experts in the science and they're care for the sunnah of the Prophet at
exactly.
the same time.
Yeah.
So if they're all, and the really important thing, I guess, in what you're saying is that they have different methodologies. In fact, they're from different madhahib, right? So this is something that is beyond the sects.
Exactly.
Right? It's something that Islam itself is bringing us. And the differences of sects and the differences of opinion, political opinion be it, or religious different opinions, they all still gather around these things.
Exactly.
That's what you're trying to say. So this brings certainty.
Exactly. And so you can't fathom the possibility of there being this being a lie. Really that the Prophet didn't say this, right? So you come across a very strong certainty. The certainty is such that I don't even need to go back and say, you know what, let me go and actually find out, okay, this sanad that you're quoting, let me see who the individuals in this sanad are, right? Because the reason why we do this, the whole exercise of going through rijal, is when you have a scholar who quotes you a hadith, and this hadith is what we call ahad, it's a one hadith, I've not heard anyone else say this, just you are quoting this, right? Now this brings to me, like, I'm not sure, maybe you made a mistake, maybe it wasn't true, I mean, one person saying something, it's not necessarily true, right? And therefore, I go to the exercise of saying, okay, hold on a second. Tell me, who did you quote from? And he says, okay, I quoted from this person. So then I ask, okay, who did he quote from? And then this builds the chain. And I check every person in the chain. It's like, oh yeah, this person's reliable, that person's reliable, no problem. This exercise is done, okay, when you have one chain.
Yeah.
Right?
And of course, as we said with Sheikh Kazdim, that even this is not the only method to attribute something to the Prophet. Definitely. We could find other ways to show that a particular hadith, even if it's one of the khabar wahid, it's a single chained hadith, even that can be attributed to the Prophet by using other means other than rijal. But rijal is one of the ways that we can trace it back.
Exactly. Now imagine if you had all this certainty, right? And this hadith, in fact, if you show my screen, is in complete synchrony and goes hand in hand with what the intellect showed, what the Quran showed, and doesn't contradict any historical narrations, right? Imagine if you have such a hadith. When you have such a hadith, it's a certainty that really this is something that the Prophet said.
Yeah.
And once the Prophet said it, and I understand what he meant, this is abiding for me, and it's an authority over me.
Now, what I really like about this, and which is really hitting me strongly here, is that this is not something that's, let me use it, sectarian. It's not to do with one sect. This is beyond sects.
Exactly.
So if there's anything, there can't be anything more Islamic than something like that. Exactly. If we can prove such a hadith, then this is like one of those basics of Islam that that none of the sects
can. Because the Prophet said it. Yeah, because right? Prophet. That's very important. So this is the methodology I want to use, right? And this methodology is foolproof, right?
Yeah.
It brings certainty. You can't escape it. Right, and you'll see as well, you'll be surprised that we go along, it's so certain, right, that you wonder what other people are thinking. Okay, so let's move on. The first hadith that I want to talk about is the hadith known as the hadith of Thaqalain.
Okay.
So the Prophet, the Messenger of Allah, peace be upon him and his family, is reported to have narrated, please show my screen, إِنِّي تَارِكٌ فِيكُمُ الثَّقَلَيْنِ كِتَابَ اللَّهِ وَعِتْرَتِي أَهْلَ بَيْتِي لا يضل من تمسك بهما فإنهما لن يفترقا حتى يرد علي الحوض. So إني تارك فيكم الثقلين. I leave behind. Or if you want to translate it more accurately, تارك is not a verb, right? So it's اسم فاعل.
اسم فاعل.
It means that I'm the leaver.
The leaver. Yeah. So this is a way in the Arabic language to give more emphasis and more strength to a verb.
Exactly. It's not something that I did it before, what I'm going to do later. It's this is who I am. It's, actually,
it shows a continuity. It shows like that emphasis in it.
So I'm a leaver. فيكم
amongst you.
ثقلين. ثقل is something weighty and valuable.
Mm-hmm.
Right. So something weighty and valuable. Over here, the Prophet says, "I leave behind you two things." Right, two valuable, weighty things. What are these two things? The Book of Allah and my progeny, the Ahlul Bayt. Two things about this. One, لا يضل من تمسك بهما. Whoever holds on to them, whoever does tamassuk to them, holds on, grabs on to them, right? Both of them. Bihima is mean both of them.
Yeah, yeah.
لا يضل, he will not be misguided. Balal means misguided, away from huda, from hidayah.
Yeah.
Right? And the second point is that فَإِنَّهُمَا لَنْ يَفْتَرِقَ. These two things, so the Qur'an and the Ahl al-Bayt, will never separate. They all stick together.
Yeah.
The لَنْ يَفْتَرِقَ, لَنْ is never, ever, yeah. ever, ever. Will they separate until يَرِدَ عَلَيَّ الْحَوْضِ, until they enter upon me in the hawd, which is paradise.
Yeah.
Right. Mm-hmm. So, question, did the Prophet really say this?
Yeah.
Let's analyze it. If you see my screen, Muslim in his Sahih book. So Muslim is obviously one of the six authors of one of the six main books of the Ahl Sunnah. He passed away in the 3rd century. In volume 4 of his book, he quotes his hadith from a chain that ends with Zayd ibn Arqam, one of the companions of the Prophet, whereby a group of people come to this person, right, and say to him, Ya Zayd, a lot of good things has reached you, right? You've seen the Prophet, you've heard from the Prophet. Tell us something that you've heard from the Prophet. Imagine the scene, right? So Zayd said, I'm an old person. Like, I've become old. My time has passed, basically. I've forgotten certain things. So what I narrate to you, take it. And what I don't narrate to you, don't blame me for it. I've become old, yeah. Right? Then he says, ثُمَّ قَالْ قَامَ رَسُولُ اللَّهِ. One day, the Prophet stood between us, Fina Khatiban, in a place called Khum, right? Referring to the incident of Ghadir.
Yeah.
He goes on to the section where he says that the Prophet then said that my time has come, I'm only a Bashar, يوشك أن يأتي رسول ربي فأجيبه. It's very close that a messenger will come to me talking about the angel of death, and I will have to answer, and I'm going to answer him. Therefore, I'm passing away. This hadith is towards the end of the life of the Prophet. Yeah. Very important. And he says, وَأَنَا تَارِكٌ فِيكُمُ الثَّقَلَيْنِ أَوَّلُهُمَا كِتَابُ اللَّهِ. I leave behind you two things. One of them is the Kitab of Allah, in which there is hidayah and there's nur, and hold on, فَخُذُوا كِتَابِ اللَّهِ. Then hold on, Kitab Allah, hold on to the book. Then it says, وَأَهْلُ بَيْتِي. And the second thing is what? Is the Ahlul Bayt. And then, أُذَكِّرُكُمُ اللَّهِ فِي أَهْلُ بَيْتِ. And the Prophet repeats this three times. This is in Sahih of Muslim. Move on to Sunan al-Tirmidhi. Sunan al-Tirmidhi, again, one of the six books of the Ahl al-Sunnah, passing in the 3rd century. Look how close we are to the Holy Prophet, right? These are primary books. He quotes a hadith from Jabir ibn Abdullah that this narration happens in the day of Arafah. That he says, I saw the Prophet say, Ya ayyuhan nas, inni taraktu fikum ma in akhadhtum bihi lan tadhillu. O people, I leave behind you two things that if you hold on to them, you'll never be misguided. What are these two things? Kitab Allah wa ittati ahla bayti. This is in Tirmidhi. And Tirmidhi has many different sharh. I mean, there's different people that come after me and comment on this.
Yeah.
Albani, who is a Salafi scholar, of very recent scholar.
Yeah.
In his Sahih of Tirmidhi, right, he brings his hadith, and then Albani says that this hadith is Sahih, right?
Interesting.
So yeah. He accepts this hadith.
Yeah. So we're going to, as far as now, only saying that Sunnis accept this hadith, even the
scholars of it. Yeah. So Tirmidhi himself, because he brings it, he counts his hadith as Sahih, he comments on it as well. Move on to Ahmad ibn Hanbal, a very important scholar for the Ahl Sunnah. In his Musnad, he's a 3rd century scholar. So in his Musnad, volume 17, he brings a hadith from Abi Sa'id that قال رسول الله صلى الله عليه وسلم إني تارك فيكم الثقلين أهدهما أكبر من الآخر كتاب الله حبل ممدود من السماء إلى الأرض. The book of Allah, which is a rope that's stemming from the sky coming down to the earth. And the second thing is إترتي أهل بيتي وَإِنَّهُمَا لَنْ يَفْتَرِقَ حَتَّى يَرِدَ عَلَيْهَا الْحَوْضِ. So beautiful. Tirmidhi brings, also, Ahmad ibn Hanbal also brings this hadith. Moving on. Ahmad ibn Hanbal, again, in his book, he brings another hadith from Zayd ibn Thabit this time. Right? So another sanad, another companion. قَالَ رَسُولُ اللَّهِ إِنِّي تَارِكُمْ فِيكُمْ خَلِيفَتَيْنِ. I leave behind you two khalifa, two things that will come after me. Right, and take up what I do, which is the guidance, which is to take you towards Allah. What are these two things? Kitabullah wa ahlu bayti. And again, it's the same thing. Wa innahuma lan yaftariqa hatta yarida alayhi al-hawd. The second part, don't neglect it. It's very important. We talk about what the Prophet meant.
Yeah.
It's really, really crucial for us.
It's and interesting. It's there in all of the versions as well.
Pretty much up until now. Hakim Nishapuri in Al-Mustadrak, in volume 3, so this is a 5th century Sunni scholar, he brings the same hadith of Zayd ibn Arqam with a bit more detail, right? And again, we find the same thing, إِنِّي تَارِكُمْ فِيكُمْ أَمْرَيْن لَنْ تَضِلُّ إِنِ اتَّبَعْتُمُهُمَا وَهُمَا كِتَابُ اللَّهِ وَأَهْلُ بَيْتِ اِتْرَتِي. Right? Same riwayat, different wordings. Ibn Hajr Haytami is a Salafi scholar of the 10th century, right? This guy has a book called Sawa'iq al-Muhriqah, which is written to reject the qawl and the madhab of the Rafida and the Zindiqa.
Which is the Shias, basically.
Kind of. Yes. So he writes a book about us, right? And in which he wants to disregard what we say, everything. Brings his hadith, quoting from Hakim Nishapuri. And he says that this hadith, fi riwayatin sahiha. First of all, this riwayat is sahih. كَأَنِّي قَدْ دُعِيتُ. The Prophet says that it's as if I have been called. And إِنِّي قَدْ تَرَكْتُ فِيكُمْ ثَقَلَيْنِ أَحَدُهُمَا آكِدْ مِنَ الْآخَرِ. The first one is Kitab Allah. And the second one is what? وَإِتْرَتِي. وَإِتْرَتِي. Right?
Yeah.
And then he says, وَلِهَذَا الْحَدِيثِ طُرُقٌ كَثِيرَةٌ. For this hadith, this Salafi scholar says, not me. In this Haytham, he says that for this hadith, there is many multiple turuq, right? Which, and they go back to more than 20 companions.
Mm.
20 companions, right? Let me mention, because I mentioned over here, let me mention this. Ayatollah Ali Hussein Milani, right? Contemporary scholar.
Okay.
He has a 21-volume book, 21-volume, called Nafahatul Azhar. In this, he brings all the hadith from the Prophet regarding the Ahlul Bayt. 21-volume book, can you imagine? In these 21 volumes, he brings just 3 volumes for this hadith of Thaqalain.
Wow.
3 entire volumes just for hadith of Thaqalain. Right? Abaqatul Anwar is another book previous to At-Tamilani. It's from an Indian scholar. He has about 7 to 8 volumes, and he says that there is 300 scholars, big scholars of the Ahl Sunnah al Jama'ah, that quote this hadith and count it as sahih. Right? So this hadith is, it's there.
It's there.
We can't deny it. So come back to my screen. Nu'mani is, now we move on to Shia scholars. So Nu'mani is a scholar of the 4th century. He has a book, Al-Ghaiba, very important book for us. Many scholars have quoted this book and praised this book and praised the author. So he brings this hadith from 3 sanad. These sanad, they are similar in some aspect, but they're different aspects as well. One of them is from Ali alayhi salam, right? One of them is from Abi Abdullah alayhi salam, from the 6th holy imam. And one of them is from the 5th holy imam. Right? So you see different imams narrating that the Prophet in Mina, في Masjid al-Khif, which is Mina, في حجة الوداع, in his last hajj, he said that, وَإِنِّي مُخْلِفٌ فِيكُمُ الثَّقَلَيْنِ, I'm the one who is leaving behind 2 things. The bigger thiql, which is the Qur'an, and the small thiql, which is the itati Ahl Bayti. Right? So this is from Nu'mani in his Ghaiba. Kifayatul Athar is a book by Khazaz Razi. He's a student of Sheikh Saduq, praised by the scholars. His book is a very important book. We'll talk about it later as well. This is one of the important books about the riwayat concerning the Ahl Bayt, each one by one, basically. Okay. So we'll come back to this book. Anyway, he brings this hadith from Abi Huraira, where the Prophet is reported to have said, "Inni tarikun fikum athqalain kitab Allah azza wa jal," and carry on. This is the same part that we want to discuss. Very important that a person like him brings this hadith, because his book is in this context, right? Yeah. That he wants to establish that the Ahl Bayt were all appointed.
Yeah.
Right? And he brings this hadith. Yeah.
And I guess he's bringing it from Abu Huraira to, again, drive the point that, look, this is not even from a Shia narrator such that he would want to invent this. This is from Abu Huraira. And, you know, if you Sunnis accept him, then there you go, basically.
Yeah. Shows a very important context of when these people were writing books, what they were writing towards, right? Yeah. Inshallah, we'll talk about that later as well.
Yeah.
When we talk about the Ithna Ashar, that these companions, these scholars, when they write books at that period, what are they writing? What are they trying to establish?
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, for now, what concerns us is that this hadith is reported in his book as well. Sheikh Saduq in his Amali brings this hadith from Zayd ibn Sabit, in Nitalikum Fikum Athaqalain, Kitab Allah, Wa Itati Ahl Bayti. This is in page 415 in his Amali. So the list carries on. I don't go through every single one, I think you'll get bored at this point. Usulu Sitta Ashar, Da'aim al-Islam, Amali of Mufid, Amali of Tusi, Basar al-Darajat. So at this point you realize that all the giants are mentioned. The giants from the Ahlul Sunnah, the giants from the Madhab of Tashayyu, right? From Saduq to Mufid to Safar to Tusi to Khazaz.
And not only this, but even the later scholars have also done have also authenticated it and agreed that
these
are authentic.
Yeah, if we go into that, then we'll be here for ages, right?
Yeah.
And let me bring this hadith from Kulaini. I mean, we didn't mention Kulaini. I brought him separately for those who really want to go through the narration one by one and go through Rijal. This is a Sahih Sanad hadith, although this one is narrated from Imam Baqir alayhi salam, who says that Ballagha Rasulullah alladhi ursala bihi. The Prophet did his tabligh. He mentioned everything he had to mention. And therefore, فَأَلْزِمُ وَسِيَتَهُ, hold on to his what he left behind, his wasiya. وَمَا تَرَكَ فِيكُم مِّن بَعْدِ مِنَ الثَّقَلَيْنِ, and that which he left behind you, for you, behind him, 2 things, which is Kitab Allah, وَأَهْلَ بَيْتِ أَلَّذَيْنَ لَا يَضِلُّ مَن تَمَسَّكَ بِهِمَا وَلَا يَهْتَدِ مَن تَرَكَهُمَا. Those who abandon these 2 things, they will never be guided.
Yeah.
Those who hold on to the 2 things, they will also be guided. It's always about holding on to the 2 things.
Yeah.
Right.
That emphasis on both of them is very important. Yeah.
Right, so up until now, we've really shown that this hadith has so many narrators, right? So many different chains. This was very important, right? It's not that we're saying that, it was just one companion and he had one chain, but all the scholars narrate from it. right? It's not like that. It's multiple chains that go back to multiple companions, all narrating from the Prophet, okay? And these giants from the Ahl al-Sunnah of different madhahib as well, right? And from the Shias, they all have, with their own filters and all the differences that they have in their methodology of how to analyze the hadith, all quote this hadith of Thaqalain.
Okay, so then now we're certain just that the Prophet has said this. And just like whatever the Prophet says is binding on us, this now having been traced back to the Prophet with certainty, we know it's binding on us. The next question comes out, okay, we've read the translation, but what does it really mean, right?
Right. So first and foremost, we said thaql means a weighty, a valuable thing.
Yeah.
So the Prophet is talking about something that he's leaving behind. So firstly, let's understand the context. If you look at the riwayat, which is a very interesting point as well, that this riwayat has been narrated in different places.
Yeah. Okay.
It shows how important it is as well. Right? It wasn't just in one place. The Prophet said this in Arafah, he said this in Mina, he said this in, this is the last Hajj of the Prophet. He said this in his khutbah of Ghadir, right? He said this in his the speech that he had after Ghadir. He said this in multiple occasions, right? Pointing to this point that this is my last days now. I'm answering the call of my Lord. I'm going. And whilst I'm going, I'm not leaving you alone. Not leaving you alone. I'm leaving you two things. Not just one. This is important.
Yeah.
Right? Not just one. I'm leaving two things behind. Mm. Don't hold on to one of them. Either of them, actually. Hold on to both of them.
Yeah.
This is crucial. Yeah. It's telling you and me, right? And I'm saying this, it sounds very obvious, but it's telling me that if you want guidance, right, after me, then make sure you hold on to both of these.
Yeah.
This is telling us that the source of authority for us, just the way the Quran is an authority, that if I read a verse of the Quran and tells me to do something, pray, for example, straight away I pray. The Quran says, believe in this, I straight away believe in this. Do I or do I not?
Yeah.
I do, right? So now if one of the members of the Ahlul Bayt, the Prophet has told us that their authority is binding for us, that if I want guidance, I have to follow them. If the Ahlul Bayt says something, just like the Quran says something, I have to follow as well.
Yeah. And this matches very well with the idea that we established earlier. It was either with Sheikh Khaldim or with Sheikh Ali that we said that, number one, after the Prophet passed away, the need for guidance was still there. And it was very clear that people had differences of opinions and people were still looking for guidance and for answers. And we also established the fact that the Quran itself is saying, I'm not sufficient. There's many details that I'm not giving you. I'm only here to give you certain guidance, a very general, very fundamental guidance, but still not the complete guidance. You need that explainer. And that once the Prophet is gone, and if he hasn't finished everything, then that clearly shows there has to be something else. So then when we turn to the Quran, we find that the Quran is alluding to this, that, you know, there is a big message and that probably is talking about successorship. And we find that the Prophet, in fact, has mentioned these, and the Prophet hasn't gone away without appointing someone. And that's exactly what we would have expected, because that's exactly
what our intellect... All comes together, the whole picture comes together. What the Aql said, what the Quran says, what the Prophet says, it all comes together, basically. Yeah.
In fact, like Sheikh Ali said, that if he hadn't, we would have asked, why didn't you?
Exactly.
It's so like, you know, it's so obvious that you need to appoint somebody after you.
Yeah. And what's important is that, but hold on, you ask, okay, what if the Ahlul Bayt tells something that contradicts the Quran? Mm. No, the Quran, the Prophet says, فَإِنَّهُمَا لَنْ يَفْتَرِقَا, they will never separate. Now, this point is crucial as well, because what do we mean by the Ahlul Bayt won't separate? Does that mean like that, where's my Quran? That the Ahlul Bayt are stuck to this?
The physical Quran, right?
Exactly. We're not talking about the physical Quran. The Prophet doesn't mention the Quran physically.
The reality of the Quran.
Exactly. The reality of the Quran is what? That the reality that guides mankind.
Yeah.
A reality that is protected. Look at the verse.
So basically the Quran that doesn't make mistakes, if the Ahlul Bayt are never going to leave the Quran in terms of what they say, what they do, their whole life, they're inculcating the Quran, therefore they would not make mistakes, because exactly. The Quran doesn't make mistakes.
Exactly. So this is the way the Quran says, إِنَّ نَحْنُ نَزَّلْنَا الذِّكْرُ وَإِنَّ لَهُ لَحَافِظُونَ. Allah says, I protect the Quran. وَلَا يَأْتِ الْبَاطِلُ. The Quran doesn't have any batil in it. Similarly, when the Prophet says that these two will never separate, they're one.
Yeah.
Until they reach me, right? That means there's no batil in the Ahlul Bayt. That means they're protected. That means they have isma.
Yeah.
That means what they say, you have to obey 100%, just the way the Quran, you have to obey.
Yeah, and just to clarify that, when we say protected, we don't mean Allah is forcing them and removing their free will, right?
No.
We said...
about that.
Yeah, it was with Sheikh Qadim that we had discussed that Allah says in the Quran, وَمَا رَمَيْتَ إِذْ رَمَيْتَ وَلَكِنَّ اللَّهَ رَمَى. You did not throw when you threw, but Allah threw. When you look at the apparent of this verse, it sounds like the free will is taken from the Prophet. But Sheikh Kadhim gave a really beautiful explanation showing that the Prophet's will is so much in line with Allah's will that when he throws, it's as if Allah is throwing, right? So in the same case here, that the Ahlul Bayt are so much with the Qur'an and they're so stuck to the Qur'an that they will never separate from it. Not that they don't have the full power, but this is what they've just made it a part of themselves, basically.
Exactly. And this concept that they are knowledgeable the way the Quran is knowledge, has knowledge, yeah, right, is so much spread in the hadith that we have, right? Everybody knew, right, from whatever madhab you may be counted, that the most knowledgeable man after the Prophet is who? Is Amirul Mu'mineen, right? That the famous hadith, for example, that the city of knowledge is the Prophet and the door of the city is Ali. Right, the fact that the Prophet says, "I taught Ali," or Ali says, "I was taught by the Prophet so much knowledge that every door would open so many doors." Right, these hadith are just too many to narrate them. Right, yeah. The hadith after hadith, you open the books of hadith, you find so much allusion to this point that the Ahlul Bayt are full of knowledge. Again, come back to the same thing, because they're attached to the Quran, they're one with the Quran. Right, the knowledge is impeccable. The way the Quran is exactly full of knowledge. In all these layers, right? It's not just the apparent meaning. There's layers of knowledge of the Quran, similar to the layers of knowledge from the Ahlul Bayt.
Yeah.
So this, from this hadith, we've mentioned many points. The first one is the fact that for our guidance, we need to hold on to two things, not just one, right? So this brings about it draws the path for us, that these are the two things you hold on to reach perfection, to reach Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala. This is what Allah wants from you, right? The Prophet mentioned this to you, that guidance depends on this. Secondly, is that they're the authority, right? The way the Quran is authority, right? Remember, we're not denying one over the other, right? This is a very important point as well. That nobody should think that, oh, we're talking about the Ahlul Bayt, therefore we neglect the Quran. No. You have to hold on to both of them, right? So we hold on to both of them.
What you said earlier, that they'll never contradict each other, just like the verses of the Quran between themselves would never contradict each other. And if we happen to feel like there's an apparent contradiction, we have to solve the contradiction. Let's say one of them is wrong.
Exactly.
In the same way, if we find and we can prove that a certain word is from the Ahlul Bayt, from the Prophet or the Ahlul Bayt, then if there is an apparent contradiction, then that's also something we need to solve. We can't just discard it just because in the apparent it looks
contradictory. Exactly, which was something all the scholars do all the time, whether it's in fiqh or it's in kalam, in aqaid, we all do it all the time. We bring the hadith together.
Yeah.
The Ahlul Bayt themselves have told us this point, right? That our words understand through our words, right?
And when they say bounce it off the Quran, it means look if there's a direct contradiction, right? If you bounce it on the Quran and you find that there's clearly it's going head to head against the Quran, against something that we discussed with Sheikh Kadhim in the previous session.
And that shows that they didn't say it.
Yeah, right? That shows it they didn't say it, because they can never say something that's head to head against the Quran.
Exactly. Yeah. And this is kind of the meaning of Thiql al-Akbar and Asghar as well. You could say meanings of this is the Quran is because it's the word of Allah.
It's the word of Allah.
But it's very important. This is from one perspective, that at the end of the day, the Quran is the word of Allah. Right, so in this sense, it becomes akbar, and what the Ahlul Bayt have is given to them by Allah.
By Allah,
right?
Yeah.
So they become the sighla asghar. However, one perspective, they're two sides of one coin.
In terms of their binding nature on us, in terms of the knowledge they represent, the reality they represent, the instructions they give are fully representative of Allah's instructions, they're both the same.
They're the walking book, basically.
Yeah. So basically, we can say that the Quran, having come from Allah, that is that let's call it that primary source. And when the Imams speak, when they speak, they also tell us, look, we're getting this from the Quran.
Yes.
So they have that knowledge of the Quran, which they're getting, which is what they're also saying that this has primacy.
Yeah. But keep this in mind, this is from one perspective.
From one perspective.
Look at it from the other perspective as well, that inside, they're both the same.
They're both equal,
right? Yeah. The hadith from the Prophet, in many places, it brings them to equal. You have to hold
on
to both of them.
In fact, we have a hadith as well, which we can discuss later, maybe, that where the Imam say that we are the talking Quran.
Yeah, Quran Natiq.
Yeah.
So, and the words of the Prophet themselves manifest this, right? That hold on to both of them. It doesn't say hold on to one of them and then check the other one, or hold on to the Quran and the Ahlul Bayt if it doesn't contradict. We don't find that in the hadith. It doesn't say this, right? That this brings them to both equal, that you have to hold on to them, both of them together. This hadith also shows to us, so the obligation of obedience to the Ahlul Bayt, so what they say is binding for us. It also shows for us the infallibility of the Ahlul Bayt, right? Mm. The way the Quran is protected, yeah, the Ahlul Bayt are protected as well. Yeah. It also shows us to us the knowledge of the Ahlul Bayt, right? Because they will join the Prophet and they attach the Quran. And secondly, because it's not possible for us to be binded to something that leads to dalal. Right? So they have to know and they have to be ma'asum,
yeah,
for because they'll be going to instruct us, right? They're going to tell us what to do. They're going to guide us. They're going to do our tarbiyah. They themselves don't know. If they themselves haven't reached, how are they going to do this?
And if their knowledge is also very superficial and can make mistakes in its interpretation of the Quran, mm, then obviously that's, again, yeah, that doesn't have hujjah. So there's definitely a source of knowledge that they have that we do not have, and it goes, exactly, hand in hand with the responsibility that they have, yeah, of continuing the message. Exactly. So again, I've mentioned this earlier as well, I really like and really appreciate the fact that whenever we talk about the role of the imam, straight away with it we get the sifat of the imam. That there are certain characteristics that they have to have. Although we decided we're going to have a separate session just opening up what the characteristics of the imams are. But then this just keeps coming up, and I really, really love it, because it shows to us that these are not things that we need to, they're not separate things. They're part and parcel of the whole concept of guidance and the fact that Allah appoints someone for guidance.
Yeah. And there's one last point as well. So we'll come back to infallibility and knowledge. And there's one last point as well you can use from this hadith as well, is the continuity of the Ahlul Bayt, mm-hmm, as well. That just the Prophet says that they will be together, okay, until the Day of Judgment. Right now we have the Quran, we don't have the Quran.
We do have the Quran.
Then we have to have the Ahlul Bayt as well.
Yeah.
Right. They can't separate. Right. If the existence of the Quran right now is here, the Ahlul Bayt has to be over here as well.
Yeah.
And this kind of alludes to the 12th Holy Imam being with us right now. Okay, but it's something inshallah we can talk about later.
Yeah.
There's one more question that remains over here, which I've mentioned, if you look at my screen, is in the third point, is the question is, okay, we talked about the Ahlul Bayt, but who are they?
Who are they, yeah.
Yeah, that's a very important question. To answer this question, I'm going to do the same exercise that we did right now, but I'll quote from a book, right?
Okay.
So we want to show who the Ahlul Bayt are. And the answer is, if you look at the riwayat that we have, again, same principle, right? Across the giants, right? Sunni, Shia, doesn't make a difference for us. Whichever madhab of the Sunnis that there are, doesn't make a difference for us, okay? You realize that there's so many ashab quoting the Holy Prophet, and these have been narrated in so many different chains, right? And all of these great scholars from every single madhab of Islam quote this and are unanimously in agreement that the Ahlul Bayt are five individuals: the Prophet, Imam Ali, Fatima al-Zahra, Imam Hassan, Imam Hussein. And the wives are not there. Yeah. This is very important also. It's two things. One is that these five, and also the wives are not there. So we neglect, yeah, negate the wives as, yeah, well. This is very important. So let me just mention a few of these. Well, I'll mention the primary author and who quotes it. So we start with Umm Salama, the wife of the Prophet. So she's quoted in Musadak al-Sahihain, as well as in Sunan al-Kubra, as well as in Mu'jam al-Kubra, as well as in Tariq al-Dimashq, that she says that في بيتي نزلت إنما يريد الله ليطيب عنكم الرز أهل البيت ويطهركم تطهيرا. This very beautiful verse of the verse of Tathir that you discussed previously. She says, Umm Salama says that this was revealed in my house. قالت فأرسل رسول الله صلى الله عليه وسلم إلى علي وفاطمة والحسن والحسين فقال هؤلاء أهل بيتي. The Prophet called to these four individuals, and then he said that these are the Ahlul Bayt. These are my Ahlul Bayt. We find that Tariq al-Dimashq with another sanad quotes Umm Salama with the same context, that she said that this verse was revealed in my house. And when this happens, she asks, قلت يا رسول الله ألست من أهل بيتي am I not from the أهل بيت as well? And the Prophet says إنك إلى خير إنك من أزواج رسول الله. Kind of politely, very respectful, because she's a very amazing wife of the Prophet.
Yeah.
Very respectful, he tells Umm Salama that you are very good, you are amongst the wives of the Prophet, but no, sorry, you're not part of the أهل بيت. This is mentioned in Tafsir Tabari as well, and in other riwayat. You can see me turn pages and see how many riwayat are there from Umm Salama doing the same thing. We find that Aisha reports, and this is reported from Sahih Muslim, as well as Mustadrak al-Sahihain, as well as other riwayat, where Aisha says that the Prophet one day came out of his house dressed in a way, فَجَعَ الْحَسَنُ بْنُ عَلِي, and the Imam Hassan came to him, فَأَدْخَلَهُ, and then Imam Hussein came to him, and then Fatima al-Zahra came, and then ثُمَّ جَعَ عَلِيٌ فَأَدْخَلَهُ, then Imam Ali came, and then this verse, ثُمَّ قَال, and the Prophet said, إِنَّمَا يُرِيدُ اللَّهُ, the verse came. So these were the people that were the individuals that were referred to, in where the verse refers to, as the Ahlul Bayt. Tariq Dimashq in another sanad brings the same hadith, and we have the same thing against where Aisha, فَذَهَبَتْ لِأُدْخِلَ رَأْسِي فَدَفَعَنِي فَقُلْتُ يَا رَسُولَ اللَّهِ أَوَلَسْتُ مِنْ أَهْلِكَ, O Prophet, am I not part of the of your Ahl? And then of your Ahl, referring to the Ahl of the Quran was about, he says, قَالَ إِنَّكِ عَلَى خَيْرٍ إِنَّكِ عَلَى خَيْرٍ, you're good, right? Like you can count it as khair, but you're not part of the Ahlul Bayt. So this was about two wives of the Prophet, that the Prophet clearly told them that although you're good, but you're not part of the Ahlul Bayt.
And this is important to know that we're not diminishing the wives of the Prophet. No. We're saying that the status of the Ahlul Bayt is something else.
Exactly. That when we talk about, when the Prophet talks about the Ahlul Bayt, when the Quran talks about the Ahlul Bayt, he means only these individuals, nobody else. This is very important. Abu Sa'id al-Khudri is one of the companions of the Prophet, and Tabari in his tafsir mentions from him, as well as Amali in his Tusi, as well as other companions mentioned, other scholars mentioned from Rasulullah, from Sa'id al-Khudri, that Rasulullah says, Nazalat hadhi al-ayatu fi khamsa. This verse was revealed about five individuals, Fiyya wa fi Ali, wa Hassanin, wa Husaynin, wa Fatima, innama yuridullah, and reads the verse. This verse was revealed about these five individuals.
So in terms of reports, we have more than enough reports that show from across the Sunni and the Shias that show that this verse was revealed regarding these five people. The Holy Prophet, in his own words, has referred to these five people.
Yeah.
I guess in, the Sunnis would have different tafasir for it. But in terms of the actual raw material and the raw quotes from the Prophet and from the Quran, it's clear that this is referring to...
You can't escape it, Let me bring one more hadith, which I think is very important. This is from Anas ibn Malik. And Sunan al-Tirmidhi reports this hadith, as well as Musnad ibn Ahmad, Hanbal, as well as Mustadrak al-Sahihain, as well as Mu'jam al-Kabir, and as well as our Shia books as well, that he doesn't mention over here. Anas says that إِنَّ رَسُولُ اللَّهِ صَلَى اللَّهُ عَلَيْهِ وَسَلَّمْ كَانَ يَمُرُ بِبَابِ فَاطِمَا سِتَّةَ أَشْهُرِ إِذَا خَرَجَ إِلَى صَلَاةِ الْفَجْرِ. The last 6 months of the Prophet's life, Anas says that whenever the Messenger of Allah would come out of his house to go to mosque to pray Salat al-Fajr, he would stop at the door of Fatima. What would he say? He says, As-salat, ya ahla al-bayt. Right? Come for salah. And then he will read this verse, innama yuridu Allah liyuthib
alaykum. So nobody, it doesn't become a doubt for anybody who these Ahlul Bayt are. It basically, just like we're seeing the fact that when Allah wants to tie a historical thing or a person to an ayah, he has to make it big. And so the Holy Prophet is trying to make it big in history.
Yeah.
That nobody doubts that. Who am I referring to when I say that?
Because when you read the Quran, you come to this verse of Tathir, you're like, who are the Ahlul Bayt? These are
very special people. It's not a joke to be purified from ritz completely.
Exactly.
So these guys have a very big status, and there's definitely some relevance in it for us.
Yeah. And so the Prophet was making it very, very clear by mentioning him many times about these prophets. So, I mean, the list carries on. Thawban and Jabir ibn Abdullah and Zayd ibn Arqam, and the list carries on about different riwayat that from different sanad report that the Ahlul Bayt are these five individuals and not anybody else, including the wives of the Prophet are not included in this. So this brings to a close to this very important hadith where we very clearly showed that these five individuals were we called the Ahlul Bayt. They are the source of guidance for us with the Holy Quran, attached to the Quran, that their obedience is wajib upon us, that we have to follow them, that we, if we want to reach guidance, we have to follow them. And that if we don't follow them, then we'll go into al-Dalal. Those who abandon them went into misguidance. And that they have infallibility, they have knowledge, and this is a continuous thing until the Day of Judgment. This is regarding the hadith of Thaqalain.
So before we move on to the next hadith, I think it's time for us to take a break. We had a good discussion on hadith al-Thaqalain, and before that on the methodology that we want to continue. So Let's take a quick break, a few minutes. Just have a drink, drink some chai or water or something, get ourselves refreshed, and then we can come back fresh for another hadith or another two hadiths, however many we want to discuss today, inshallah. So, brothers and sisters, let's take a few minutes break and we'll be back, inshallah.
بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم السلام عليك يا أمين الله في أرضه وحجته على عباده السلام عليك يا أمير المؤمنين أشهد أنك جاهدت في الله حق جهاده وعملت بكتابه واتبعت سنن نبيه صلى الله عليه وآله حتى دعاك الله إلى جواره فقبضك إليه باختياره وألزم أعدائك الحجة مع مالك من الحجج البالغة على جميع خلقه اللهم فاجعل نفسي مطمئنة بقدرك راضية بقضائك مولعة بذكرك ودعائك محبة صفة عميائك محبوبة في أرضك وسمائك صابرة على نزول بلائك شاكرة لفضائل نعمائك ذاكرة لسوابق آلائك مشتاقة إلى فرحة لقائك متزودة التقوى ليوم جزائك مستنة بسنن أوليائك مفارقة لأخلاق أعدائك مشغولة عن الدنيا بحمدك وثنائك اللهم إن قلوب المخبتين إليك والها وسبل الراغبين إليك شارا وأعلام القاصدين إليك واضحا وأفئدة العارفين منك فازعة وأصوات الداعين إليك صادا وأبواب الإجابة لهم مفتحة ودعوة من ناجاك مستجابة وتوبة من أناب إليك مقبولة وعبرة من بكى من خوفك مرحومة والإغاثة لمن استغاث بك موجودة والإعانة لمن استعان بك مبذولة وعداتك لعبادك منجزة وزلل من استقالك مغالة وأعمال العاملين لديك محفوظة وأرزاقك إلى الخلائق من لدنك نازلة وعبائد المزيد إليهم واصلة وذنوب المستغفرين مغفورة وحوائج خلقك عندك مغفية وجوائز السائلين عندك موفرة وعوائد المزيد متواترة وموائد المستطعمين مؤدة ومناهل الضمائر مترعة اللهم فاستجب دعائي واقبل ثنائي واجمع بيني وبين أوليائك بحق محمد وعلي وفاطمة والحسن والحسين إنك ولي نعمائي ومنتهى مناي وغاية رجائي في منقلبي ومثواي أنت إلهي وسيدي ومولاي اغفر لأوليائنا وكف عنا أعدائنا واشغلهم عن أذانا وأذهر كلمة الحق واجعلها العليا وأدهث كلمة الباطل واجعلها السفلى إنك على كل شيء قدير.
بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم. Dear brothers and sisters, assalamu alaikum and welcome back to the session, session number 7, where we're discussing Imama in light of ahadith. So we're with Sheikh Miqdad discussing the ahadith that are to do with Imama that have come from the Prophet of Islam, and we spent the last the first part of the discussion talking about, apart from the methodology and the introduction in the beginning, we talked about mainly the hadith of Thaqalain. So Sheikh Miqdad, you said we can move on to another hadith.
So the second hadith that I want to talk about is the hadith of Manzilah. So if you bring my screen, the hadith is this, that the Prophet is reported to have said, "Anta minni," addressing Amir al-Mu'mineen. It's very important over here. The Anta refers to Amir al-Mu'mineen, mm-hmm. Ali ibn Abi Talib, that you are to me, minni bi manzilati Haruna min Musa, that which Harun was to Musa. So Harun had a position in regards to Musa. The same position that Harun had to Musa, you or saying, Ali, you have to me.
Okay.
Yeah. Okay. Except one exception. Right, so I'm not giving a mutlaq, a general principle, except it has one exception. Right, everything else except one exception. Illa annahu la nabiyya ba'di, except that there is no prophet after me, and therefore you're not a prophet. Right, but what Harun had in relation to Musa, you have in relation to me. Right, Inshallah, when we talk about what is the prophet trying to say over here, we'll be discussing this the maqam that Harun had in relation to Musa and analyze this hadith. But before we do this, what do we have to do? Try and see that really the Prophet said this or not.
Yeah.
Right, so let's begin our journey. Bukhari. So Bukhari, you know him, amongst the primary books of the Ahl Sunnah. Very early on, his death is around 256. Okay. Those are different reports about this. He brings a hadith. He narrates this hadith in volume 5, page 19, where the Prophet says, قَالَ النَّبِي صَلَى اللَّهِ وَسَلَّمْ لِعَلِيِّينَ. The Prophet says to Ali, أَمَا تَرَبَى أَن تَكُونَ مِنِّي بِمَنْزِلَةِ هَارُونَ مِنْ مُوسَى. Are you not happy, are you not pleased that you are to me what Harun was to Musa? Right? This is what Bukhari reports, and so this is a Sahih hadith according to me, obviously, because it's Sahih Bukhari. Muslim is second in line. He brings in his Sahih on page 1817, volume 4, a hadith from Sa'd ibn Abi Waqqas, where he reports from the Holy Prophet that the Prophet said, لِعَلِيٍّ, to Ali, أَنْتَ مِنِّي بِمَنْزِلَةِ هَارُونَ مِنْ مُوسَى إِلَّا أَنَّهُ لَا نَبِيَّ بَعَدِي. Right? This is in Sahih Muslim. Muslim brings another narration with a completely different sanad this time, and he says that خلف رسول الله صلى الله عليه وسلم علي بن أبي طالب في غزوة تبوك. The Prophet is leaving Medina to go to Tabuk for the war. Right? The Quran talks about this extensively. He appoints his Khalifa. Khalifa. He appoints his Khalifa in Medina. Tells Amir al-Mu'minin, you stay in Medina, you are my Khalifa. You are in charge of my responsibilities. Everything that I am as an authority and leader in Medina, you are in charge of it now.
Yeah.
Okay, as I'm about to leave. So Amir al-Mu'min turns to the Prophet and says, "I leave me behind me with all the children and the women," right? The Prophet says to him, "Ama taruba an takuna minni bimanzilati Harun min Musa ghayra annahu la nabiyya ba'di." Are you not pleased? Yes, I'm leaving you with the women and the children, but are you not pleased that your station is that what Harun had to Musa, except that there is no Prophet after me?
Yeah.
This is a hadith from reported in Sahih Muslim. Muslim in a third narration, right? Mm-hmm. So he brings three narrations, with a different chain of narration. This is an interesting one. Sa'd ibn Abi Waqqas reports that Amara Muawiyah ibn Abi Sufyan Sa'dan, right? Muawiyah and Sa'd have a discussion. They're kind of a argument, right? And Muawiyah is not happy with Sa'd. Ma manaka an tasubba Abu Turab? What's wrong with you? Why not insulting and cursing Abu Turab? Who's Abu Turab?
Imam Ali.
Yeah. Right? So Sa'd turns to him and says, look, right? I will tell you three things that the Prophet said about Amirul Mu'minin, that if I had one of them, it would be enough for me to be so happy. Right? And then he brings it. One of them is what? أَمَا تَرَضَى, the Prophet said about Amir al-Mu'mineen, أَمَا تَرَضَى أَن تَكُونَ مِنِّي بِمَنْزِلَةِ هَارٌ مِنْ مُوسَى إِلَّا أَنَّهُ لَا نُبُوَّةَ بَعْدِي. This is in Sahih Muslim.
Yeah.
Very interesting incident that happens between Muawiyah and Sa'd. We go to Tabarani. Tabarani has a Mu'jam al-Kabir. We mentioned this previously as well. Mu'jam al-Kabir, important book for the Ahlul Sunnah. Tabarani is a 4th century scholar. In his book, from Asma binti Umais, completely different narrator and a different chain completely. Sami'atu Rasulullah, I heard the Prophet, the Messenger of Allah say, li Aliyyin, again regarding Ali, anta minni bi manzilati Harun min Musa illa annahu la nabiyya ba'di. Exactly same words. So the words are not changing.
The words are not changing. It's really interesting. Yeah. So, yeah.
Ibn Asakir, 6th century scholar, in his Tariq Madinatul Dimashq, he quotes this hadith from Sa'd. He says, again, same thing. سَمِعْتُ النَّبِي يَقُولُ لِعَلِي إِبْنَ أَبِي طَالِبِ, that I heard the Prophet say about Ali, very important, and مِنِّي بِمَنْزِلَةِ هَارُ مِنْ مُوسَى إِلَّا أَنَّهُ لَا نَبِيَ بَعْدِي. Same words. And then it's interesting. Ibn Asakir then says, okay, wait, let me tell you something very interesting. وَرُوِيَ هَذَا الْحَدِيثِ أَيْضًا عَنْ غَيْرِ سَعْد. This hadith has been reported from other than Sa'd as well.
Okay.
Who else? رُوِيَ عَنْ عُمَر. An Ali
himself,
An Abi, yes,
Imam himself.
Okay. Yeah, because he says that Prophet told this to me.
Yeah,
An Abi Huraira, An Ibn Abbas, An Ibn Ja'far, An Muawiyah, say Muawiyah, An Jabir Ibn Jabir Ibn Abdullah, An Abi Sa'id, and he goes on, and he goes on and on and on about all the different narrators that have narrated this hadith.
Yeah,
right.
Which really shows that this is not something that was done once, or it wasn't done in seclusion. It was done in front of people. Many people have heard this, and this is clear cut from the Prophet.
And we'll come back to it. Keep this point in mind because it's very important. And then Ibn Asakir takes each of them and he goes on and discusses them. So now that I mentioned the primary narrator from the Prophet, let me mention the chain and bring you the chain. And for each of them, he brings the chain then and goes on, page after pages. This is Ibn Asakir in Tariq Dimashq. Khob. We come to Sheikh Saduq, amongst the Shia scholars. Sheikh Saduq, 4th century, in his Amali. Let me mention something about Amali.
Okay.
Amali is a session, so they call majlis, right? Where Sheikh Saduq sits amongst his students. In this session, he brings different riwayats. That not that many.
A majlis in this sense is not like what we have, a majlis where we have a speaker and then like a whole crowd.
Yeah.
Majlis in this literal sense, a gathering.
A right? gathering, yeah. A place where people sit down together, yeah. A class kind of, you could say.
Yeah.
And then Sheikh Saduq dictates to a person a hadith with full sanad. Right, so Amali is a very special place. Over here, you don't bring about something that you're not sure of, or let's discuss about it.
You bring what you believe.
Exactly.
Right?
Yeah. You bring that something really strong. I want to tell you, I want you to write down properly, exactly word by word what I'm saying. And then you would dictate this, write down that this person narrated to this person, to narrate to this person, and this is the hadith. Right. So Amalis are very special.
Yeah.
We have Amali of Saduq, we have Amali of Sheikh Mufwid, we have Amali of Sheikh Tusi. So we have plenty of, this is a common thing that was happening.
Yeah.
In the discussion of hadith, we can explore this more, a bit more.
Yeah, yeah.
So he brings with his sanad this riwayah that the Prophet said, Li Ali ibn Abi Talib, Ya Ali. The hadith goes on to different manazil, which is very interesting, right? So your manzala to me is the way that this person was to this Prophet and this person was to this Prophet. One of them is, Bi manzilati Harun min Musa. Sheikh Saduq, in another jalase, another majlis, with a different chain of narrator from Jabir ibn Abdullah, mentioned this, that in Fateh Khaybar this time, very interesting, in Fateh Khaybar, that Amir al-Mumineen was, when he stood up and he went to fight, etc. Everybody knows the story. The Prophet here mentioned this, أَنَّكَ مِنِّي مِمَنْزِلَةِ هَارُونَ مِنْ مُوسَى إِلَّا أَنَّهُ لَا نَبِيَ بَعْدِي. Sheikh Saduq in a third jalasa, in a third majlis, with a different chain of narration, from Ali ibn al-Husayn. فَلَمَّا وَلَدَتْ فَاطِمَةُ الْحَسَنُ قَالَتْ لِعَلِي. This is a story where, over here, Hassan ibn Ali is born, right? So we had a different, the previous one was in Khaybar, right? This is when Imam Hassan is born.
Okay.
When Imam Hassan is born, there's a discussion about what should be the name of this child, right? At this point, the Prophet enters the scene, and he said that you should name this child the same names that the sons of Harun had. Why? Because إن عليا منك بمنزلة هارون من موسى because the status is the way Musa Harun was to Musa and therefore Imam Hassan and Imam Hussein are named the same sons the same names that Harun's son had. Then Saluk brings in a second and in a fourth and a fifth majlis with different chains of narration the same hadith. So Saduq in his Amali five times in five different sessions brings the same hadith that happened in different contexts from different narrations, from different sanads. Nu'mani in his Al-Ghaybah, he brings hadith from, this is from Amir al-Mu'minin himself. He says that an incident happens where something is said about the Prophet and about some incident. The Prophet gets really angry, climbs on the member, and he mentions this point that إِنَّهُ مِنِّي بِمَنْزِلَةِ هَارُونَ مِنْ مُوسَى, talking about Amir al-Mu'minin. Mm-hmm. Al-Amali of Shaykh Tusi. So Shaykh Tusi, as I mentioned, also has an Amali. In his Amali, he mentioned this from Umm Salama, right? Where the Prophet tells Umm Salama, Ya Umm Salama, Aliyun minni, wa ana min Ali, I am, Ali is from me and I am from Ali. Lahmuhu lahmi wa damuhu dami, right? Wa huwa minni bi manzilati Harun min Musa. So his blood is my blood, that we're one flesh basically. And he is to me the way Harun was to Musa. And he says, then bear witness, Hada Aliyun Sayyidul Muslimin.
Yeah.
Sheikh Mufid, in his Al-Ifsah fil Imama, again a very important book, we'll talk about this later as well. It's a Aqaid book. He brings his hadith, أَنْتَ مِنِّي بِمَنْزِلَةِ هَارُونَ مِنْ مُوسَى إِلَّا أَنَّهُ لَا نَبِيَ بَعْدِي. But look what he says, بِلَا اخْتِلَافٍ بَيْنِ الْأُمَّةِ.
There's no difference of opinion in this hadith.
Between who?
Between the Ummah.
Between the Ummah.
Yeah. Again, this is one of those things that is beyond the sects. It's something that if we were to put the sects aside, this would still remain. This exactly. would still maintain. Yeah.
We don't care about anything. This has been rated across the board, basically. Yeah. That the Prophet said this. This is very important for us. That we're not sure, we have certainty within us that the Prophet said this.
Yeah.
Right? These words came out from the Prophet's mouth.
Yeah. Now we're sure. Go and explore what they mean.
Exactly. I can bring Al-Kafi for those who are interested to go into Sanad, for example. Here's a very Sahih or Sanad riwayat from Sheikh Kulaini in Al-Kafi, yeah. Volume 8, page 107. Ali ibn Ash'ari and Muhammad ibn al-Jabbar and Hassan ibn Ali ibn Faddal and Tha'lab ibn Maymun and Abi Umayya Yusuf ibn Thabit ibn Abi Sa'ida and Abi Abdullah qala Rasulullah anta minni bi manzilati Harun min Musa illa annahu la nabiyya ba'di. Right. Question is, what does this hadith mean? Right. So if you bring my screen, I think the translation of the hadith is quite obvious, right? So a manzila, a station that Harun has in relation to Musa, that Ali has in relation to Prophet, with one exception. Right? So the question is, we want to find out, okay, what does Harun have in relation to Musa?
And we know the one place that's discussed this is the Quran. The Quran has discussed the story of Prophet Harun quite well.
Exactly. So we open Surah Taha to start with. The story of Musa a.s. in Surah Taha, where Musa is speaking to Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala. And Allah instructs Musa that I want you to go to Fir'aun, preach to him, tell him about Tawheed, and ask him to liberate the Bani Israel. Musa alayhi salam turns to Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala and says that waj'alli wazira min ahli. Appoint for me, from my ahl, a wazir. Haruna akhi. Who is this wazir going to be? My brother Harun.
It's very interesting. The ahl is also there, relevant to Imam Ali. The akhi is also relevant.
Yes, sir. The Prophet said to you, everything except one thing that is on Nabi. So yes, he's ahl. He's the akhi. He's the one who's bringing strength in the mission. He's going to carry on the mission.
Yeah.
Everything.
So what does wazir mean?
Okay. So what does wazir mean? If you look at the dictionaries, and something that everybody agrees with, wazir. So wazara or wazir basically is that which you hold on to, right? And so that's wazir, right? And then wazir is one who takes this from you. What is this in this context? Is responsibility, that task, that responsibility, right? And this, so for example, Ibn Darid, 4th century dictionary, says that was سمي الوزير وزيرا لأنه يحمل وزر صاحبه, because he carries on that task, that load, that responsibility of his of the person that he's wazir of.
Yeah.
Right. For example, Tahdhib al-Lugha, Azhari, again, 4th century, he says that Wazir al-Khalif, the Khalifa.
The one who follows you, basically. Exactly. Takes over you.
Who takes, what is a Khalifa? What does a Khalifa mean? Right? A Khalifa is somebody who, when you're not there, okay, or after you, takes up your responsibilities, or what you're doing.
Your position, basically.
Your position,
yeah.
Right? So a Khalifa signs off the last paper. Right, he's the one who does everything you're supposed to do.
Yeah. He so basically, here the Prophet is saying, "Look, this is my Khalif, this is my Wazir, but not a prophet. That's the only difference. He's not a prophet, but he's doing the same duties.
Yeah, and which is what
is Imam, basically. What we define.
But what was the Prophet doing? Guiding the people.
Guiding the people.
Making sure the people reach to Allah Subhanahu wa Taala. Doing tabligh to the people. Protecting the religion. Explaining the religion. This goes on.
Yeah.
Right. That everything has that the Prophet had, Amirul Mu'minin has as well, except one thing, which is what the Nubuwwah. That's it. Very, very important. So Ibn Taymiyyah, if you show my screen, because there's a discussion. Like, one thing people usually ask is that, Miqdad, if this is so obvious, then like, what do they say?
Yeah, what do they say? How do they explain? Because they clearly accept this hadith as well. So what do they say about it?
So they say very weak things. Right? I mean, you really can't, right? But they try. They try and they say, no, but it means that, so one ishkal that they have, for example, is that it doesn't really mean khalifa, right? Wazir means that Harun was with Musa helping him during this time, right? Mm-hmm. Because at the end of the day, Harun didn't live after Musa, did he?
Yeah.
Right. So look at what Ibn Taymiyyah says. So if you show my screen, this is Minhaj al-Sunnah from Ibn Taymiyyah, volume 7, page 326. So he's talking about the manazil that Harun had in relation to Musa. It's from jumlati manazil Harun annahu kana khalifatan li Musa. As a Khalifa for Musa.
So even Ibn Taymiyyah is saying it.
Okay. Right? I mean, he can't escape it. You yourself saying that he's the Khalifa after you.
Yeah.
You know what? Look at the next verse. Surah Furqan. وَلَقَدْ آتَيْنَا مُوسَى الْكِتَابِ وَجَعَلْنَا مَأَهُ أَخَاهُ هَارُونَ
وَزِيرًا.
Right? That he has made Harun your wazir after you. Okay? مَأَهُ أَخَاهُ هَارُونَ مِنْ مُوسَى. Okay. Next verse. The verse in Surah Araf, وَقَالَ مُوسَى لِأَخِي هَارُونَ أُخْلُفْنِي فِي قَوْمِي.
Take over me in my community whilst I'm not there, basically.
Exactly. In relation to my community, in relation to my ummah, okay, I want you to be the Khalifa. This is exactly what the Prophet did to Amirul Mu'minin.
Yeah. Right?
That regarding my community, you are the Khalifa after me. Another thing.
So regarding this, so here Prophet Musa is going for 40 days, right? And like you mentioned, one of the things, one of the common doubts about it, which at least I've heard, is that the Prophet left Imam Ali as his wazir for that period of time when he had gone to a war.
Tabuk.
Tabuk. But I guess from the different narrations you've brought, it's clear that there was other places he said this, not just in Tabuk. So it shows that this was not limited to a particular wartime, right?
Yeah. So this is very important because it's one of the things that they use as well. Right? One of the ways they try to avoid this, they say, oh, but this was revealed regarding Tabuk, and it's there in the books of Hadith as well, that the Prophet, when he was leaving for Tabuk, he left Amirul Mu'minin as his Khalifa, and it says as well, right? That he was his Khalifa.
Yeah.
But just like Musa left Harun in that during period, Amirul Mu'minin was left during that particular period of Tabuk, right? Where he says that, are you leaving me behind with the women and the children? And the Prophet says, are you not happy that you are too? So kind of completely collaboration. The answer is a few things. The first answer is that if you look at your books and our books and all the books together, you realize that in only one of those places was that this hadith was revealed in the event of Tabuk.
Yeah.
The same hadith the Prophet said many times, right? So we find that the Prophet said this when Imam Hassan was born.
Yeah.
We said that the Prophet said this
in Khaybar.
Yeah. Interestingly, Ahmad ibn Hanbal as well as Tabarani mentioned this was said in the Act of Ukhuwah. So when the Prophet migrated from Mecca to Medina, if you remember, he made one Muhajir and one Ansar as brothers. And Amirul Mu'minin was left. He says, you are my brother. And at that point, he said that you are to me the way Harun was to Musa. Khwarizmi, Manaqib Ali ibn Abi Talib said that this was revealed in Khaybar, as well as a different hadith as well. Another place where this is mentioned is where the incident of the closing of the doors that lead to the mosque, except the door of Amirul Mu'minin. People complained, how come the door of Amirul Mu'minin is open? Because his status is the status of Harun to Musa, right? And other places as well where there's a river. So you realize that not only is this specific to Tabuk, this has been reported in different places.
Yeah.
Right? And the Prophet keeps emphasis on this point that this is a maqam that he has.
Yeah.
And the second point is that if really like you want to just leave Amir al-Mu'minin for Tabuk, right? Would you really bring up this
whole concept? It's such a big concept, right?
Exactly.
It's like you're comparing two prophets. Okay, and you're basically even saying that you are to me like Harun was, except you're not a prophet. And I guess when somebody looks at this, is like if the prophet is negating only prophethood from Imam Ali, that means he's also accepting that the rest applies to Imam Ali.
I mean, this is a common way of speaking, right? When you say that this is there except one thing, I mean, if there's another thing that was to make an exception, I would have said it, right?
Yeah, yeah.
So everything's included in the first part.
Yeah.
So this is extremely important that... And everybody agrees that Harun's status was that he was the Khalifa of the Prophet. Yeah.
So basically from this hadith and from matching it to the Quran and seeing what the Quran says about Harun and Musa, in summary, what are the points that we get?
So the first one is that after the Prophet, we have an authority. Very, very important.
An authority appointed by Allah.
Yes.
Appointed by Allah, right.
Clearly appointed by Allah. This is extremely important. Appointed by Allah, we have an authority. You know, there's something that... certain things we say all the time, but you really need to digest and think about it. You know, if you think about it, it's such a beautiful concept that the Ummah wasn't left alone, right? At the end of the day, we need a leader, right? We need someone to follow, right? I mean, it feels really sad that I don't have anybody to follow. The Prophet is gone, and I don't have anybody to follow.
Yeah.
Me and my religion, what do we do? This religion, this Quran, where do I go, right? But no, Allah said, I have a leader for you. I will appoint the leader for you. Right? And I will tell you who this leader is. And not just any random person as well. It's going to be an impeccable, full of knowledge, full of infallibility person. Right? So here we have a leader. This hadith is telling us, right? The way Musa, and this is also another very interesting point in bracket. This thing doesn't happen when Musa is going to leave Bani Israel after everything happened. That he went to Fir'aun, brought Bani Israel to the place. And then when he's going to the mountain, he leaves Bani Israel alone. Then he asks Allah for Harun as a Khalifa. No.
Right at the start, soon as the mission started. And this actually takes us back to the Da'atul Dhul Ashira,
Ahsan.
The Prophet announced Imam Ali's successorship straight at the start of that mission.
Exactly, the start of the mission. The first thing Prophet does is bring his close family members. The first thing he tells about to them is that I need a helper. I need somebody who's going to carry on the mission.
So it's really beautiful. The hadith is both in terms of authenticity, it's clear. But if you want to use other factors to show that this content is in line with everything else, we find that it's completely matching this relationship between Musa and Harun.
Yeah.
Like literally at all the steps is exactly the same except for that prophethood aspect.
And it matches the Quran and it matches the hadith as well. All the hadith, you put them together, they all come together as every piece of the puzzle comes together basically.
Yeah.
That what Prophet did at the beginning of his mission, what he did throughout his mission, right? Ensuring to tell us that the first point was what? That you are going to have a leader after me. You're not going to be left alone, right?
Yeah.
The way Harun was there for Musa, Ali is going to be there for you. The second is also that he's full of authority. If he's my Khalifa, a Khalifa does what I'm supposed to do. The way you obeyed me, you have to obey him.
Yeah.
The way I'm in charge of ensuring to do your tarbiyah and to take you to Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala to guide you, Amir al-Mu'minin will be doing the same thing as well.
Yeah, yeah.
Right? This is very, very important. This is what this hadith tells us. Shall we move on?
Let's move on, I guess. Yeah, let's move on. Ahsantum. So this was the hadith of Manzila. So that's two hadiths. So we did the hadith of
Thaqalain
and now the hadith of Manzila, and both of them have given us a few things. The fact that the Prophet did appoint a successor after him, but it's also given us a taste of some of his traits as well, right? So this idea that, for example, they're together, so with the Quran, and here as well, if the Prophet is saying that he's not a prophet but he's everything else, which means that all the traits are necessary for this role, he would have it, except that wahi, that specific wahi that is only for the prophets,
is not there.
Yeah.
Perfect. The third hadith that we want to talk about is the hadith of Ghadir. Famous hadith, man kuntu mawlah fa aliyun mawlah, Allahumma wali man walah wa adi man adah. So, man kuntu mawlah means whoever for whom I am his mawlah, right? Fa aliyun mawlah. Ali is also his mawlah.
Yeah.
Right? Allahumma, turn to Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala. O Allah, wali man wala, be the wali of the one who becomes his wali. Wa adi man ada, and be the enemy Okay, or the one who is the enemy of him, his enemy, basically. So let's begin this journey of asking this question of, did the Prophet really say this? So we start this journey with looking at Tirmidhi in his Sunan. So Tirmidhi amongst the six primary books of the Ahl Sunnah, third century scholar. He brings this hadith from Anabi Sariha, Abu Zayd ibn Arqam. So one of the two of these narrators have reported this from the Holy Prophet, قَالَ مَنْ كُنْتُ مَوْلَى فَعَلِيٌّ مَوْلَى. Moving on to Ahmad ibn Hanbal, a very important scholar, 3rd century, in his volume 2, he brings this hadith where أَنْشُدُ اللَّهِ مَنْ سَمِعَ رَسُولَ اللَّهِ. This is a very important hadith because Abdurrahman ibn Abi Layla, he says that شَهِدْتُ عَلِيًّا فِي الرَّحْبَةِ يَنْشُدُ النَّاسِ. I witnessed Ali in a very open plain, right? He was calling to the people. Right, أنشد الله من سمع رسول الله صلى الله عليه وسلم يقول يوم غدير خم من كنت مولا فعلي مولا. Said, who over here heard you calling
so,
out?
So Ali himself is saying this.
Who of you among in a plane, right? Rahba is a plane. He's calling out to the companions. Said, who amongst you heard this, that the Prophet said this on the day of غدير خم, that he said من كنت مولا فعلي مولا. This exact words basically. لما قام فشهد قال عبد الرحمن فقام 12 بدريا. 12 people from the Battle of Badr, so amongst the senior scholars, the senior Sahabas, yeah. Right? They got up and they did shahadat, right? That we heard this. نشهد أن سمعنا رسول الله. We bear witness that we heard the Prophet in the day of Ghadir, يوم ألست أولى بالمسلمين من أنفسهم وأزواج أمهاتهم. Am I not have no more authority over you than yourselves? And my wives are like your mother, referring to the verse of the Quran. The people said, بلى يا رسول الله. فقال فمن كنت مولى فعلي مولى اللهم والي من والى وعاد من عاد. Right? So this person said that 12 of the companions, of the highest and the senior companions, got up and bore witness that this incident happened.
And they added to it. They also said more that not only did we hear that, but we heard more than this.
And this is important because these two lines that together they come as the one that we want to establish the Prophet said, basically.
Yeah.
Ibn Majah is again amongst the six primary books of the Ahl Sunnah. In his Sunan, so he's a third century scholar, in his Sunan, he brings a completely different sanad, and he says that سَمِعْتُ رَسُولَ اللَّهِ صَلَّى اللَّهُ عَلَيْهِ وَسَلَّمَ يَقُولُ مَنْ كُنْتُ مَوْلَى فَعَلِيٌّ مَوْلَى. And he also brings the hadith of Manzil over here as well. So okay. This is Ibn Majah. Balazuri, strong scholar of the Ahl Sunnah, 3rd century, in his book Ansab al-Ashraf, in a different sanad, this one, this time from Hurayra, says نظرت إلى رسول الله صلى الله عليه وسلم بغدير خم وهو قائم يخطب وعلي إلى جنبه. Say, I witnessed the Prophet on the day of غدير whilst he was standing giving a khutbah, and Ali was إلى جنبه. فأخذ بيده, and he lifted Ali's hands. فأقامه وقال من كنت مولا فهذا علي مولا. The Prophet lifted the hands of Ali and said this sentence. This same riwayat from Balazuri, Ibn Asakir, 6th century, we talked about him before as well in Tarikh Dimashq, he says that this riwayat is reported from 8 different sanad that go back to Abu Huraira. So we have 8 different turuq, right, that go back to Abu Huraira, and he goes on and explains all these 8. Balazuri, again, in a completely different sanad now, okay, in a different page, he brings his hadith. Whereby the Prophet says, "Qala ayyuha an-nas, awalastu awla bil mu'minin min anfusihim? Do I not have more authority over you than yourselves?" Qalu bala, the people said, "Bala, yes." Then he says, "Are not my wives like your mother?" They said, "Yes." So then he says, "Hada waliyyu man ana mawla." This is the wali of the one for whom I am the mawla. This is interesting. Which word is used over here? The word wali is used over here. Allahumma wali man wala wa adi man aada. This is in Balazuri's book, 3rd century. Nasa'i is one of the authors of the six primary books of of the Ahl Sunnah, but not in his Sunan that he has in those books, but another book. He has a book called Khasais Amirul Mu'minin, right? In that book, he mentions this hadith with multiple sanads, right? And this is volume 1, page 93. So in this one, I've put over here on my screen, Zaid ibn Arqam, talking about Hajjatul Wida, the last Hajj, and he describes it at length, basically. And we find this same concept that Man Kuntu Mawla, Fahada Aliyun Mawla. And what's important is that he brings multiple sanads for this riwayat as well, right? They're different from the ones we talked about. One of the issues, kind of doubts that sometimes posed, that how come the books of Tabari doesn't bring it? This is a kind of a shubha and kind of a doubt people pose, historical books, I mean, primary history book like Tabari, okay, why would he not bring this hadith? Now, we know from different contexts that Tabari is very anti-Shia, right? He doesn't like us too much. But it's interesting, look at this, okay? So Tabari, yes, agreed. In his book, in his famous book of Tariq, Tariq al-Tabari, he does not mention this event of Ghadir at all.
Very interesting.
Right? But look, Ibn Kathir mentions in his Bidaya wa Nihaya, in volume 5, page 232, he says, قَالَ أَبُو جَعْفَرُ بْنُ جَرِيرَ تَبَارِي فِي الْجُزْءِ الْأَوَّلِ مِنْ كِتَابِ خَدِيرِ خُمْ. Tabari has a separate book called Ghadir al-Khum in which he discusses this event.
Interesting.
Ibn Asakir, okay, two centuries before this, in Tariq Dimashq, right? He says, وَلَمَّا بَلَغَ تَبَارِي أَنَّ أَبَا بَكْرِ بْنِ أَبِي دَاوُدَ السَّجَسْتَانِي. So when Tabari hears that Sajastani تَكَلَّمَ فِي حَدِيثِ غَدِيرِ خُمْ, right? When he hears that Sajastani is writing a book about غَدِيرِ خُمْ, or he's talking about the غَدِيرِ خُمْ, عَمَلَ كِتَابِ الْفَضَائِلِ, right? He begins to write a book called Fada'il, right? In which he brings the Fada'il of Abu Bakr and Umar and Uthman and Ali, rahmatullah alayhim, وَتَكَلَّمَ عَلَى التَّسْفِيهِ حَدِيثِ غَدِيرِ خُمْ وَاحْتَجَّ لِتَسْفِيهِ. He brings about, he talks about the hadith of غَدِيرِ خُمْ, and he argues for the sihat of this hadith.
Authenticity,
right? وَأَتَى مِنْ فَضَائِلَ أَمِيرُ الْمُؤْمِنِينَ. He brings the fadail of أَمِيرُ الْمُؤْمِنِينَ. عَلَى بِمَا إِنْتَهَى إِلَيْهِ وَلَمْ يَتَمُ الْكِتَابِ. The book, he doesn't finish the book, unfortunately.
Interesting.
And Zahabi, so
that's strange. He doesn't bring it in his main tariq book, but then he brings it in another book.
Right. One of the answers is because if you look at Tabari, some scholars have suggested that Tabari actually, that he doesn't bring anything of the last events of the Prophet, or very few. It's kind of, he puts the main focus on what happened before. Mm. And that last periods of the Prophet, he talked about what happens after as well. But those last moments of the Prophet, as if he's kind of skipped it or doesn't pay too much attention to it.
Interesting.
But he has a book. So Zahabi also in his Sayyar al-Nubala, he says the same thing as well, that actually Tabari has a separate book about the Ghadir. He talks about, and he actually says that this hadith is sahih. Come to Bukhari now. So Bukhari doesn't mention this hadith in his sahih. However, he has a book called Tariq al-Kabir, right? The same Bukhari, yeah? So in Tariq al-Kabir, he brings this in the Sanad, whereby he says that Man Samia Nabi alayhi salam يقول يوم غدير خم من كنت مولا فعلي المولى. So this same hadith of غدير, he brings it in his tariq book. This is Bukhari. And I've made a list over here that we can go on. These are more contemporary scholars, not contemporary. They're later on scholars that actually say that this hadith, and they use the word mutawatir. So for example, Suyuti, right? Famous Sunni scholar of the 10th century, right? He has two books that he calls them al-hadith al-mutawatirah. The hadith are mutawatir. And his own definition of hadith, that we don't doubt that the Prophet said this.
Yeah.
Right? And in this book, he brings the hadith of Ghadir. Right? Same thing regarding Zubaydi, right? The author of Taj al-Uruz. Right? He has a book that he calls it al-hadith al-mutawatirah. And he brings in this book hadith of Ghadir.
Yeah.
Ghazali also brings this hadith. Salasatul hadith of Albani also brings this hadith. Albani is a Salafi scholar. Yeah. He brings Man Kuntu Mawla. You can't deny it.
Okay.
So all these individuals bring this hadith of Ghadir. And we come to, on our side, Allama Amini, I mean, may Allah have mercy on him, compiles his book Al-Ghadir, in which he begins this book like this. I'm going to mention the narrators, the primary narrators of Al-Ghadir, the من كنت مولى فهذا علي المولى. And he goes on in alphabetical order, mentioning 110 companions of the Prophet that narrated this hadith.
That's a lot. That's huge.
Let me tell you something very interesting. If you compare Ghadir with the previous two hadith that we did, so hadith Manzila and hadith Thaqalain, those two hadith, the Prophet said them many times, right? Across
different occasions.
Occasions, yeah. The Prophet mentioned it. Keep repeating this, right?
Yeah.
Man kuntu mawla was said how many times?
Once.
Just once,
yeah.
Right? But it was said with a bang.
Yeah, there's right? a big impact made.
Exactly. He said it in front of so many people in such a way that you cannot forget this event.
Yeah.
Right, I mean, you have to really close your eyes and be blind to say, like, maybe the Prophet didn't say this.
Yeah.
Right. I mean, it's so obvious. He made it like very clear
that and again, this was said. Again, this had to be done, like we said again, and I think I'm going to repeat this so that it becomes really firm in us that these two verses of the Quran, whose meaning depends on the historical event that it's referring to, and therefore that historical event, the Prophet has to make it big. It has to make it such that. You know, the verse came to mind, يُرِيدُونَ يُطْفِئُوا نُورَ اللَّهِ. You know, they want to cover it, they can't cover it, right? Allah is going to make sure that His اللَّهُ مُتِمُّ نُورِهِ. You know, Allah completes His light. And the Prophet made such a bang in history that even those who don't like the Shias, who don't like, okay, not the Shias, but who don't want to accept the concept of Imamah, they are forced to bring it. But then, which is the next discussion, I guess, because they have a different worldview, they have different principles they want to accept, they try to explain the words in a different way. Or but the fact them. That this happened, they can't get away with it.
Exactly. Yeah. So when you ask the question, did the Prophet say this, you can't escape it.
Yeah.
You have to admit that the Prophet said this. So carry on, if you read my screen. Sheikh Saduq, in his Amali, we talked about his Amali, he has this time 7 majlis in which he brings this hadith from different sanad. So I mentioned one of them over here, for example, from Abi Harun and Abi Sa'id. لَمَّا كَانَ يَوْمُ غَدِيرِ خُمْ أَمَرَ رَسُولُ اللَّهِ مُنَادِيًا فَنَادَ الصَّلَاةَ جَامِعَةً فَأَخَذَ بِيَدِ عَلِيهِ. After the prayers, he raised the hands of Amir al-Mumin. قَالَ اللَّهُمَّ مَنْ كُنْتُ مَوْلَهُ فَعَلِيٌ مَوْلَهُ اللَّهُمَّ وَالِ مَنْ وَالَى وَعَادِ مَنْ عَادَى. In this particular hadith, Sheikh Saduq brings what Hassan ibn Thabit said. And shall I remember this name? We'll come back to it afterwards. And so he goes on, Saduq, talking about the same Man kuntu mawla, Allahumma wali man wala, in 7 different majlis with 7 different sanat. Right, readings. That's how big this hadith is.
Yeah.
Kashi, reported from Tusi in page 67, brings this hadith. I brought this over here, one, because it's Kashi, I wanted to mention Kashi. And second, because I thought this hadith was very beautiful. This hadith is about the Battle of Jamal, where Lama Suri'a Zayd ibn Suhan. Zayd ibn Suhan is a very amazing companion. You know, this reminds me, something I want to do is, maybe we can do it on OP sometime, is to go through some of these companions that we haven't heard of them.
Yeah,
some of these narrators of hadith and these very strong companions that we're not familiar with them. There's so many beautiful stories about them. So in this case, there's a Battle of Jamal and Zayd ibn Suhan has fallen to the ground, right? يوم الجمل جاء أمير المؤمنين حتى جلس عند رأسه. Amir al-Mu'minin comes to him and sits next to his head, right? فقال رحمك الله, may Allah have mercy on you, يا زيد قد كنت خفيف المؤونة عظيم المؤونة, right? Zayd, you are such that you are very light for me, you're never troubling me,
you're never a burden on me,
you're not a burden for me, but you are عظيم in your مؤونة, in your help towards me, you are عظيم, you are great.
Because we know there are some companions who are burdensome for the halal bait.
فرفع زيد رأسه إليه. Then Zayd raises his head a little bit. And he says, وأنت جزاك فجزاك الله خيرا يا أمير المؤمنين. May Allah reward you, يا أمير المؤمنين. And then he mentions what he heard from the Prophet. And one of the things he mentions, سمعت أم سلمة, I heard أم سلمة زوج النبي تقول سمعت رسول الله, she said that the Prophet said, يقول من كنت مولا فعلي مولا اللهم والي من والا وعادي من أعدا وانصر من نصر واخذل من خذل.
So it's as if he himself was not there at the time of Hadith, or he was far.
Perhaps he heard it from the wife of the Prophet, who said that I heard that from the Prophet directly. Right, very beautiful incident. I thought I'd bring this as well.
Yeah, really nice.
Kulaini, rahmatullah alayhi, in al-Kafi, brings this hadith. on page 287 of volume number one, that again, I brought this particular hadith. Kafi mentioned this hadith many times again, right? So all his book mentioned this hadith many times. I brought this hadith because this was interesting again. He says that Hassan al-Jammal, he's with Imam Sadiq alayhi salam, right? And they hamal to Abu Abdullah min al-Madina ila al-Makkah, and we're going from Madina to Makkah. Falama intahayna ila Masjid al-Ghadir, and we reach a place where it was called the Masjid al-Ghadir. What does this tell you? The fact that there's a masjid called Masjid al-Ghadir between Medina and Makkah.
Okay. That means they've even gone and established a monument for it.
Exactly. That's how much famous and how much, until the time of Imam Sadiq, right? That this event is so obvious, so much that there's a masjid for it.
Yeah. So when the event actually happened, as we remember the event, there's nothing there. It was bare land, yeah. Right? There was no water, nothing. Yeah. And so there's a masjid now. So it shows that they've put a monument for it, which is really amazing because we'll discuss that later, but sometimes we also make monuments for things, right? Yeah. Out of respect for them, out of remembrance for them.
Yeah. So Nadara, the Imam looks at ila maysarat al masjid. He looks at the right side of the mosque. Faqala, Imam Sadiq says, ذَلِكَ مَوْضِعُ قَدَمِ رَسُولِ اللَّهِ حَيْثُ قَالَ مَنْ كُنْتُ مَوْلَهُ فَعَلِيٌ مَوْلَهُ. This is, he points out, he says, this place over here is where the feet of the Prophet were when he said this, مَنْ كُنْتُ مَوْلَهُ فَهَذَا عَلِيٌ مَوْلَهُ. Right, and then it says, "فَقَالَ ذَلِكَ مَوْضِعُ الْفُسْتَاتِ أَبِي فُلَانٍ وَفُلَانٍ," and this place over here, pointing, says this is the place where the tent of these individuals were.
Hmm.
Right, so kind of like Imam Sadiq is telling his companion, like, "Let me just picture it out for you. Let me lay out the scene for you." Right, very beautiful. This is in Al-Kafi. I could go on. Basar Darajat has this in page 77. Safar, Nu'man in his Ghaiba has this. Mufid, Sheikh Mufid in his Amali has this, Sheikh Tus in his Amali has this, Humayri in Qurb al-Isnad has this, Usul al-Sita Ashara has this, and the list goes on, right? This hadith has been narrated just too many times for us to even question or doubt that the Prophet really said this.
Yeah. So once again, this is another one of those hadith of the Holy Prophet that there is no doubt that the Prophet says it. It is beyond sects, so all sects accept it. So if we were to ever strip sects away, this is one of the things that will stay for sure.
Yeah.
Right. So you have the Quran and the few in the words of the Prophet. One of the things that definitely stay there and everybody accepts are these words. So what do they mean?
Let's go on. So what do they mean? Let's bring the event into place. One of the things that we realize from the event, right, is that this is important. This is no joke. Right. So what is this event? So this is the end of the Prophet's life. We're about 2 months away from the Prophet passing away. He goes to Hajj, which is called the last Hajj. For those, I was teaching Kitab al-Hajj just recently last term, where we look at all the riwayat related to Hajj. And it's so beautiful because the Kitab al-Hajj is full of these riwayat describing the Prophet, how he did Hajj. Right? There were so many people with the Prophet, and this event was so important. Right? Many things happened during this event. And I saw previously as well that the hadith of Thaqalain, for example, was mentioned in Mina, was mentioned in Arafah. These are the last days of the Prophet. Yeah. The people are with the Prophet. They're attached to him. It's a big event.
Yeah.
Right? The Hajj finishes. The Hajj ends. Right? Everybody back on their way back now. On the way back, they reach a place which is a Ghadir. Ghadir literally means a creek.
Okay.
Right, kind of a place where
water gathers.
Gathers, but there was no water. So a place where water gathers, but at that point there was no water, basically. Yes. Kind of a stadium. All right, and this place is called Khum. The Prophet, when he reaches this place, it's also a place kind of a junction where people would at that moment separate to go to their own ways back home. At that point, the verse of Balligh is revealed, which we'll talk about later, where the Prophet is instructed that I want you to deliver some message.
Yeah.
Deliver a message, right? And so the Prophet tells his companions, stop over here. The narration said that it's hot. Right? Yeah. They've just gone to Hajj. For those who've been to Hajj, you know how Hajj is difficult. Yeah. I mean, in today's world, it's difficult.
Very hot, yeah.
Despite the air condition and everything, imagine at that time how difficult Hajj is. I remember I fell ill for ages after that, right? So we're all tired. In this heat of the desert, we're in the middle of the desert. Nobody, there's nothing around here. The Prophet says, stop over here. A verse has been revealed. I need to tell you something. But I'm not going to tell you right now. Right? We have to wait for the guys that are still behind. Let them join us. The guys who are forward, I want to send a few messages. Can you bring those guys back? Right? Bring those guys back. You guys wait to join us. Some hadith said the Namaz Jama'ah was led over here by the Prophet. They waited for a bit. Now, you can imagine the people, right? It's hot. We just finished Hajj. We want to go home. The Prophet had left. Something is big is going to happen right now, right? And it's full of people. It's huge, right? So this context tells you that something big is going to happen. It's a very important event. The Prophet has an
important message.
It's an important event that happens.
Yeah. And can are we sure that the verses of Iblagh are related to this event?
Okay, so here we go. The first verse that's related, so there's two verses that are related to this event.
Yeah.
Very crucial verses. So the first verse that is revealed is, Ya ayyuhar rasul, balligh ma unzila ilayka min rabbik, O the messenger, balligh, right? Mention to people, tell the people, do iblagh to the people, ma unzila ilayka min rabbik, that which has come to you from Allah. So this is a message from Allah, only from Allah, has come to you. You know about it, huh?
Okay.
Right? I'm not going to tell you over here in the Quran. Yeah. I could have.
So this Allah. This is a really interesting point. It strikes to me when I hear this verse, that means Allah is also telling us through this verse that Allah is communicating with the Prophet through a means other than the Quran, because here he's not mentioned what that message is in the Quran. So if we claim that the Prophet's knowledge of deen is only based on the Quran and the zawahir of the Quran, then the Prophet should technically not know what the message is because it's not there in the Quran.
Exactly.
That means he has a knowledge from Allah that comes other than the Quran.
Yeah.
And through that knowledge, he knows what to say there. It's really interesting. It's really amazing.
Yeah. And the second point is that this also shows that we need the hadith as well. We need the Prophet to tell us
Basically shows that Allah has a different way of communicating those details of the Sharia and those important messages other than the Quran. Therefore, the Quran doesn't have all the information in its detail. Yeah. There is a different detailed pathway that we need to follow.
I mean, it's very much in Allah's power to be like, let me just tell you right now within the verse. Yeah. But He doesn't reveal the verse with the message. Says, I want you to tell the people now.
Again, showing also the centrality of the Prophet, that he is also important in this deen. He has centrality and his primacy in this deen.
Yeah. And you need to hear it from him. Khob. وَإِن لَمْ تَفْعَلْ فَمَا بَلَّغْتَ رِسَالَتَ SubhanAllah. Now, this is not a joke anymore, right? If you think this was a joke, right? It says, if you don't do this, kind of threatening the Prophet. Right? We know the Prophet is going to do it. It's just to show how heavy this message is, that it is equal to the entire prophethood of the Messenger of Allah. If you don't say this one message, right? How big is Man Kuntum Mawla? As my teacher would say, it would stick this much, right? Like this much. Man kuntum mawla is just 3, 4, 5 words, right? This is equally weighted to risala. Yeah. That if you don't say this, then your whole risala is pointless, right? Wallahu ya'asimuka minan nas. And if you're scared about the people, if you think that these kind of people are going to harm you, okay, don't worry, I'm going to protect you.
Yeah. And as we discussed with Sheikh Ali again in the previous session, everything is coming together. That this verse, the reason why the Prophet is maybe scared is because of that personal relationship we had with Ali, who he wants to appoint.
Yeah.
And that leads a threat to his personal life as well.
Yeah. And the last point is, Inna Allah la yahdi al-qawm al-kafirin. That Allah will never guide those who reject this call.
Yeah.
Right. So this verse, was it revealed during the time of this particular event of Ghadir? I'll just mention, there's something common. I mean, Tafasir mentioned this. I'll just bring a few examples to really bring certainty for you.
Yeah.
So Ibn Abi Hatim is a scholar, a Sunni scholar of the 4th century. I'm not going to bring Shia scholars over here because for us
it's pretty clear.
I'll bring the Sunni Tafasir and I'll try to use the main ones as well. Ibn Abi Hatim is 4th century, right? He's got Tafsir al-Quran in which said, نَزَلَتْ هَذِي الْآيَةِ يَا أَيُّهَا الرَّسُولُ بَلِّغْ مَا أُنزِلَ إِلَيْكَ مِنْ رَبِّكَ فِي عَلِي ابْنِ أَبِي طَالِبٍ. Right? He has his sanad for this particular thing that he wants to say. Ibn Hasan al-Wahidi, 5th century Sunni scholar, right? In his Asbab al-Nuzul, so he has a book called Asbab al-Nuzul. He says, نَزَلَتْ هَذِي الْآيَةِ يَا أَيُّهَا الرَّسُولُ بَلِّغْ مَا أُنزِلَ إِلَيْكَ مِنْ رَبِّكَ يَوْمَ غَدِيرِكُمْ فِي عَلِي ابْنِ أَبِي طَالِبٍ رَضِيَ اللَّهُ عَنْهُ. So his own sanad to say that this verse was revealed, in that event of Ghadir. Tha'labi, 5th century Sunni scholar, in his Tafsir Thalabi, very famous Tafsir, right? When he quotes from a sanad this verse, Ya Yur Rasul Balligh, he says, Nazarat fi Ali, radiallahu an. right? And he even then talks about man kuntum alayhi, brings the hadith itself. It says the Prophet was commanded, he held the Prophet's hand, the Ali's hand, and said, man kuntum mawla fa aliyun mawla, Allahumma wala man wala, Allahumma wali man wala wa ada man ada.
Yeah.
This is from Ta'alabi.
In fact, even if we didn't have these, when we just put the dots together, we know that these verses were at the end of the Prophet's Risalah. And intellectually, we also established that the Prophet has to leave a successor. And we know throughout that there was no official appointment of such a successor. So if we were to put the dots together, even without this, like keep it to conjectures at least, right? We would have a strong guess that this is to do with the event of Ghadir. Yeah. So these are just putting the dots together and confirming for us what our intellect is telling us and the dots our intellect is making. This is just confirming for us that this is actually the case.
Yeah. And lastly, I brought Shuhad al-Nuzul of Haskani, 5th century scholar, Sunni scholar, who again says, قَالَ نَزَلَتْ هَذِي الْآيَةِ فِي عَلِيَ بْنِ أَبِي طَالِبْ يَا أَيُّهَا الرَّسُولُ بَلِّغْ. So, I brought another one as well. Haskani actually brings different multiple sanads, and they're approved by Tariq Dimash of Asakir, Ibn Asakir. So he brings this hadith as well. So there's no doubt that this hadith, this verse was revealed in Ghadir.
Yeah.
So I brought the verse over here again to emphasize these points, right? So what we get from this verse is very important. Ya ayyuhar rasul is an address to the Prophet. Balligh ma unzila ilayka min rabbik. You have to do a blagh of something. We don't know what it is. I'm not telling you. I want you to tell you. Something that you know as well. Ma unzila ilayka min rabbik. Right? Wa in lam taf'al fama ballaghta risala. This is as weighty as risala. If you don't do this, okay, your entire 23 years of effort that you went through. It wasn't a joke.
And he went through a lot of effort.
Right? What happened in Mecca? What happened in Medina? The different wars, the different...
Not only that, but even in terms of the content of the deen and the whole purpose of a hidayah is all tied to and dependent on this last message.
Yeah. And what
again
else
shows that, yes, again shows message. That it's a continuation. That, exactly. And if you think about it, this Prophet started a movement.
Yeah.
Well, it needs to continue, right? Exactly. He didn't start a movement for it to just flop strewn after he dies. Yeah.
The second verse that is very important is the verse of Al-Yawm, يَأِسَ الَّذِينَ كَفَرُوا مِنْ دِينِكُمْ فَلَا تَخْشَوْهُمْ وَخْشَوْنِي الْيَوْمْ أَكْمَلْتُ لَكُمْ دِينَكُمْ. Right? So let me just translate this verse. Today, Al-Yawm. Right? So this is very interesting. Right? When you're reading the Quran, let's say you're reading the Quran blank, you don't have anything about it in mind. Come to this verse, Al-Yawm. Alif Alam means like the day.
Yeah.
And you're like, which day?
Which day are we talking about?
Right? So here again, you have another verse that talks about referring to a historical thing that happened. And that has to be very clear. That has to reach me with a lot of certainty.
That historical event is very important because Allah is saying that the day, this day is when the deen is complete.
Exactly.
And Allah finds it important to mention this for us.
Yeah.
That means there's something about that day.
And that day has to reach me very clearly. It has to be a big day, basically. It has to be a massive day. It's repeated twice. Al-Yawm ya'isa alladhi al-Yawm akmaltu. Right? So al-Yawm ya'isa alladhina kafaru. The kuffar, those who are against Islam, they now despair. Right? It's the end of the hope that they had. Min dinikum. Right? So this is very important when you analyze this verse. You're like, okay, what did the kuffar had hope in? So first they had hope. First they did what? They boycotted the Prophet. Right? That didn't work. Then they tried to kill the Prophet and the Prophet migrated. It didn't work. Then they tried to fight him, it didn't work. They tried to do things with the munafiqeen, it didn't work. They tried to do all the different things that they could do, the kuffar, okay? They had hope in, everything failed. Guess what? There's one thing they were left with. There was one last hope. What was that hope?
When he dies, we take over the movement.
Exactly. See, at the end of the Prophet's life, the kuffar are left with one hope. My last and final hope is that you go, and after you will take over.
Yeah. And this is normally any movement, in any revolution, anything. When the leader goes, that's when the crisis actually happens. So that's when the point where the movement is at its most fragile place is when there's a change of leadership. When the first leader dies and what's going to happen next.
And now with this event, Allah says that that's it. They're now in despair.
Yeah.
The last final hope
stamps it basically.
Exactly. Yeah. The final hope that they had, even that is now crushed. Now they're in despair. Ya isal ladina kafaru. That's it. They're in despair. So don't فَلَا تَخْشَوْهُمْ وَخْشَوْنِ. So don't fear them. Don't worry about them. Right? Like, that's it. Al-Yawm. Now let me tell you about this day. What happened is this day? أَكْمَلْتُ لَكُمْ دِينَكُمْ. The deen has been completed. Right? And brought to perfection. And you've discussed with Sheikh Ali, so I won't go on too much. وَأَتْمَمْتُ عَلَيْكُمْ نِعْمَةً. And the ni'mah and the blessing are completed. وَرَضِيتُ لَكُمُ الْإِسْلَامُ دِينًا. And I'm happy with this deen as Islam. Which is the day? Which part of you are you happy with? What happened that made you happy with this deen? What happened that completed this religion? It was the appointment of Amirul Mu'minin as the Mawla, as authority after the Prophet.
Excellent.
I think time is running, so I'm just going
to... We're actually gone a little bit
okay,
over.
Okay, so I'm going to go quickly. Yeah. So, Dur al-Manthur, Tariq al-Dimashqi, Manaqib Ali ibn Abi Talib, Shawahid al-Tanzil, everybody agrees basically. This verse was revealed at that point.
Okay.
There are a couple of doubts that later scholars, especially Salafi scholars, bring about this, right? And what they do is that they bring a couple of contradictory hadith that are khabar wahid as well, okay? That said that no, al-yawm akmaltu was revealed somewhere else. On the day of Arafah, on the night of Arafah, it's contradictory hadith that ahad as well, that don't stand too much ground when it comes to
everything we've said so far. There's one point we forgot to mention. Why did the Prophet actually wait for the Hajj to finish? Why not say it in Hajj when everybody's already there?
Very important point, because you want this to be, as I said, you want to be a bang, right? If you say in the Hajj with everything that's happening, I mean, you remember how Hajj is, right? It's so packed. We've got to do this and then this and then this, and everything's very busy. It gets lost, right? You let Hajj finish, everybody comes, everybody's calm, we're going home, we're happy. Suddenly the Prophet calls us, I have got one more last thing to tell you, right? It's like, oh, what's happening? What is it? Somewhere in random place, nowhere. We don't even know what this place is. There's no water, we're tired, we want to go home. It has to come with a big bang, basically, right? So the Prophet waits for that moment. Now, one of the things that comes about this hadith, is what is the meaning of Mawla, right? So we went over here established.
This is where we have a difference with the Sunnis. Yeah. So everything we said so far, I think we're together with the Sunnis on that.
Yeah.
This is where the difference is.
So we're going to show that Mawla actually means authority. Not helper, not friend, not beloved. It means authority, right? The first one is the sentence that the Prophet says before he brings man to Mawla is Alastu awla bikum min anfusikum. And you saw this came in many of the traditions, right? Agreed didn't come on all of them, but it came in many of them. Enough for us to say the Prophet said this. Alastu awla bikum min anfusikum means what? Do I not have more authority over you than your own self? Referring to a verse of the Quran. And everybody bears witness that yes. Man kuntu mawla fa hadha aliyun mawla. Right? Now, really, when I talk about my authority over you, and then say, oh, but then he's my someone that I really like. Right? Or my helper, for example. No. The context of this thing. Even in the... Now, we talk about the context of the event itself. The verse that came, that was enough as well. Yeah. But even this one, right? The sentence just before what I just said, right? Just before I said, Man kuntu mawla, I'm talking about authority with you. I'm telling you, do I not have authority? Then I am the mawla. Man kuntu mawla, fahada aliyun mawla. The one who am mawla, I am mawla. Which mawla? I had authority over you. You just agreed. You bear witness. Then Ali has the same authority. Yeah.
When you put all the things together, it just doesn't make sense to try and make it mean something else. Like you said, the sentence before it, the dua after it.
Yeah, so that's the second point. The dua after man wali man wala wa adi man ada. He turns into Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala. You be the wali of the one who is wali and hate the person who hates him.
Yeah.
Right? The wilaya of Allah. Like it's not talking about friendship and like I can be a helper. It's talking about authority.
And also then, so you have the context of the actual statements of the Prophet, then you have the context of the fact that he made such a big deal out of it, and then you have the two verses related to it. This is not about friendship. I mean, we can go past it. This, like, it's clearly
Let
trying...
Let me carry on. Let me carry on.
It's clearly trying to make excuses for it. Like, it's pretty clear.
One of the ways we can understand is to say, how did the people over there understood from it? That's a very important question, right?
Definitely.
Like, there are people out there who heard this. How did you understand it? And the way we find this is through the poems that they had. At that moment, they said some poetry. And even later on as well, they made poetry about this, right? One of the very important aspects of Al-Ghadir, of Allama Amin, is this, right? After he brings all the Sahaba and all the companions that narrate this hadith, he goes on and talks about the Ash'ar, the poetry that was done about this event. And he shows from that what the people understood from this...
What the people got from this was this meaning.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So for example, let me bring two over here. Hassan ibn Thabit, I mentioned his Amal al-Saduq was there, right? So for example, I'll mention everything. He says, إِلَهُكَ مَوْلَانَا وَأَنْتَ أنت ولينا ولن تجدا منا لك اليوم دهر عاصيا فقال له قم يا علي فإنني رضيتك من بعد إماما وهاديا. So Hassan, when he's talking about this, yeah, he says, the Prophet says, "Qum ya Ali, stand up, ya Ali, because فَإِنَّنِي رَضِيتُكَ مِنْ بَعْدِ, I'm pleased that after me, you are what? Imaman wahadiyan."
So it's interesting that what they understood from it was not only an authority, so they got the authority part, but it wasn't just a political authority. They took it as an authority in deen as well.
Because imam, right?
Imam and hadiyah, it's like a big difference. It really gives meaning to it.
So this is how an Arab of that time understood, right? Another famous one is Qais ibn Sa'd, right? Another companion. When he talks about this, again, I won't read it. When he talks about saying imamat, he understood imamat and being an imam from this sentence of the Prophet. You know something very interesting? When I was going through this, you don't find a single person coming to the Prophet, and there were loads of them, right? A single person coming to the Prophet and said, "By the way, what did you mean?
Did you mean friend, the mullah in the meaning of friend, or the mullah in the meaning of authority?" It's pretty clear. You're wasting your time.
So some of the scholars later on, right, recent scholars, they come and say, "No, but it's not very clear. We're not very sure what the Prophet means." I mean, come on, you've got...
If it wasn't sure, then they would have asked as well.
Exactly, right? I mean, that's such an event, you would say something so blurry. You wouldn't say something blurry, right? When you're in that maqam, you say something crystal clear.
Yeah.
And so crystal clear, the companions understood it. Mm-hmm. You now sitting over here, you're kind of doubting whether what was said, but they understood exactly imam from it. And lastly, I want to bring this as well, is that I'll bring two more points. One of them is that كَأَنِّي دُعَيْتُ فَأَجَبْتُ, and the context of this riwayat is also that it's the last moments of the Prophet. The Prophet says himself that I'm answering the call of Allah right now. I'm about to leave you. When you talk about leaving somebody, right, you're going to tell them about what? What's going to happen after me?
Yeah.
Right? When I'm the maqam, I'm going to talk to you right now. I'm saying to you, look, I'm about to leave. Right?
Yeah. So what should you do after me? The wasiyah is normally to do it after
right?
me. Yeah.
Exactly, right? When I come to you, imagine, right, one day, I come to you and say, "Yes, sir, I've got something really important to tell you." Right? I'm about to die. Right? I mean, what's the next thing that's going to happen? It's like, what to do after me?
Yeah.
Right? What should you do with whatever? So this is quite an important context as well. And the last one is, Mawla means authority in the dictionary, right? But also in their own words, the Ahlul Sunnah's words as well, they've used Mawla to define the word Mawla. We can talk about Wilaya later, but just the word Mawla itself comes in the Quran. When they talk about the Mawla, they say Mawla means authority. Look at Fakhr Razi himself. Fakhr Razi is one of the people who actually kind of brings about doubts about this. So he himself, when he talks about the verse of the Quran, Ma'awakum nar, Ya Mawlaakum, he said, Ya Awla Bikum. Ya Awla Bikum, they have authority over you. Right. Bukhari talks about this as awla bikum. This word mawlaakum, he's talking about the verse over here. Mawlaakum is awla bikum. So they themselves, when they talk about the verse of the Quran, when the mawla is used in the verse, it means authority.
It has authority.
The last thing that we want to discuss, which we're not going to do today, I'm going to leave this for, inshallah, tomorrow's section, is now that we've established all this, okay, let's go a bit more into detail and ask this question: what does this mawla really, really mean? You've talked about authority, you've talked about imama, you've talked about all these things, but mawla comes from walaya, which is wilaya, right? And wilaya is a very, very important context in the Holy Quran that we want to talk about this. So in the next session, we'll begin, inshallah, by talking about this wilaya, talking about mawla comes from wilaya. What does wilaya mean?
Okay.
So just to conclude, I'm just going to bring back these five hadiths because I want to mention one point that, I mean, in light of all this we talked about, shows how important these hadith are, right? And something I would like to encourage everyone is to memorize this hadith.
Memorize this hadith. And also know them, what they are, their context, you know, the points about them. It's quite important.
Yeah. Right? As Shias, we should know this. These are five hadiths that we should have at the back of our hands. Because
unfortunately, we learn them like from a young age in madrasa and it becomes very cliche for us, right? Yeah. And we feel like, okay, but there's nothing else. But this is it. This is the main thing. It's like, you know, you've read the Quran so many times, you're like, is there another Quran? You know, no, this is it. We just need to appreciate it, think about it properly, ponder over it, and these points will become fresh and stronger for us, you know. So definitely very important verse, hadith. There's two of them that we haven't discussed yet. So inshallah, we need to still...
tomorrow, wilaya, and then we're going to ithnashar and mamata.
Inshallah. So we're still going to discuss those two hadith. Thank you very much, Sheikh Miqdad, for the very interesting discussion. Brothers and sisters, it went a bit longer than expected, but I hope it was a very fruitful discussion, something very important, and inshallah, a lot to learn from. So until the next session, assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.